The Off The Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM.
Brought to you by Pandora. Celebrate love with a special gift.
You're very welcome along this Monday morning to OTB AM, broadcasting live on OTB Sports Radio and, of course, across all of our social platforms on Facebook, on YouTube and on Periscope, on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at Off The Ball AM. I'm Joey Gilroy here every morning with you until 9.30 alongside Owen Sheehan. Owen, how are you?
Very well. How are you getting on?
You've been all over the country. You were outside a windswept, stormy Aviva on Saturday evening.
It's great fun.
Gathering the thoughts of some fans, intelligent and Mayo fans alike.
Yeah, fantastic fun, yeah. I'm sure my enjoyment came across in the piece.
It did, yeah. It's 5.5 minutes of glory. And it's one of the few times you've got to celebrate a win. I mean, I know we won games, but like in Japan...
True, actually.
We lost as many games almost as we won. And the ones that we won, we were supposed to win anyway.
It's actually a good point. I didn't think about it that way. We only kind of had the Scotland win in Japan to really have a sense of self-confidence about it. This deep, weird Irish thing of being like, yeah, no, actually, we are superior.
Does that change your strategy when you're sidling up to some drunken Irish people about what they're going to say and how you're going to ask them to
absolutely
commune?
Not.
No.
Absolutely not.
Here, listen, I'm a bit stuck here.
Okay, no, sorry about the weather. Really sorry about the weather. Can you just give me 5 minutes, please?
Yeah, that's it. That's all.
And there's a good chance I probably won't even use your content. Maybe 2 seconds of it, to be honest with
I'll
you.
Out
just say something funny.
Bad stuff. Yeah.
If you say anything that actually makes sense, it will not make the final cut.
You were also in the arse end of Tyrone. I don't even know what part of Tyrone that was.
Edendork. Yeah, Edendork. Just outside Dungannon. Went into Dungannon.
Is that nominative determinism? who is the dork of Edendork?
Well, there you go.
They should have a festival every year, like, you know, the Puck Fair, the Goat, the Dork of Edendork.
Yeah, the newspapers this morning seem to be picking up on the first couple of syllables of the name instead. Garden of Eden and all that sort of stuff is...
Come on, this is a missed opportunity. Tab of the morning to you.
Huge missed opportunity.
I mean, is Clifford the Dork of Edendork today?
I think you've probably got our headline there for this morning's show. The Dork of Edendork is probably David Clifford for falling foul to... whatever the powers that be.
That's unfair. It's the referee and the umpires. The dorks of Edendork.
It's true. This umpire, I don't know who he is. To be honest with you, I've kind of got a bit of sympathy for Fergal Kelly here.
For the ref, because he's just doing what he's told.
Yes. Like, the umpires have a front row seat to this. They can see this incident developing better than anybody else in the ground. This guy right here... And he
started the start, so I kind of framed that wrong. What happened? There was a load of stuff around the country, a lot of people watching different stuff. The storm was on. Everybody might not have seen
this. People were watching the election yesterday.
They were,
let's face
fairness.
It. And I was like, okay, so David Clifford gets booked at the end of the first half. I actually didn't see what he got booked for at the end of the first half. Either way, goes into the second half. But a booking, you presume Tyrone are well aware of this, that Kerry's best player is on a booking.
Oh, yes.
Ben McDonald comes in. And essentially
a sub right.
Essentially comes on, and I actually don't remember him coming on, but the first time I remember him being involved is, oh, there he is on top of David Clifford. After watching it back, you can clearly see that he's got him on the ground, he's got his hands on his neck. David Clifford does this thing where he's put his hands out, like trying to paint a picture saying, I'm not involved in this sort of scuffle that's developing on the ground here. And then the referee comes over and is like, what's going on here? Goes over to the umpire and is like, yeah, yellow card each, and books them both, which is an astonishingly terrible decision, given the umpire was right there and David Clifford and Ben McDonald were right over there.
However, we all know in GAA that no matter who starts the scuffle, if there's two people involved, it's a yellow card each, because no one can be arsed working it out. There's a bit of work involved in working out who starts it, and you can't be... No one's going to tell the truth. You can't walk over and say, lads, who started it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a yellow card each. Them's the unwritten rules.
And that was my initial emotion when it happened. I was like, oh, for God's sake, he's after getting caught. Is it like I was almost veering towards silly boy David Clifford.
Victim blaming.
And exactly. And then I saw Clifford go over to one umpire and then to the other umpire, come around in front of where we were, kick the sideline flag, kind of shake Peter Keane's hand and then walk into the dugout. And I was like, I've never seen this kid behave like this before. Like, this is a fella who we didn't have any issue with him getting the captaincy. If you had to give one criticism of perhaps Clifford down through the ranks at underage, it's like, why isn't he running more? Or things like that. It's never on the level of this guy plays on the edge or shows too much emotion or is angry or anything like that. It's actually always on the other side of things. He takes life very, very easily. Nothing gets to this guy. So I was wondering, why on earth is he reacting so furiously? And I mean furiously to what's after happening here. And then you see the video back and you're like, oh, well, that explains everything. And then if you kind of actually think about my initial reaction and most people's initial reaction, which was, them's the rules, you kind of start to think to yourself, well, why is David Clifford actually kind of settling for this? Why are we actually settling for this as fans of Gaelic games? For a man who probably had opportunities to go play professional sport, who would probably be better looked after by other officials, why is he hanging around? Why is this just a thing that people accept? Because this isn't going to change. Referees will still appoint their father-in-law to umpire as umpire for games. Like we've seen, like gombinery in certain aspects of the general election over the course of the weekend. There's plenty of gombinery to go around when it comes to the GEA as well, especially when it comes to these lame ducks that dress themselves in white and stand beside the goalposts. Like the most useless of GEA officials that have ever existed.
But how
the
do you...
linesmen are bad. The umpires are absolutely useless. Like just get referees, dress them in white, and call them end-line officials or something like that. Get rid of umpires because they're actually. Even calling them pointless is probably doing them a bit of a service that they don't deserve.
How do you litigate that? How do you litigate the two lads come together and they end up wrestling? Like what is it punishment free? There should be no repercussions. Shouldn't be a booking for anybody.
Like if you see the incident yesterday and you see a guy with his hands on the ground, he's actually painting a picture because he knows that the umpires are sometimes
find life a little bit difficult to see
what's going on.
But hang on a second. I mean, all you have to do is start that and then lie on the ground and go, oh look, this guy's lying on top of me, after you like tweak his nipple or punch him in the balls or whatever. Like there are many practitioners of the dark arts mm-hmm. who would be able to be the person on the ground but who would actually have started it. So how do you litigate it without giving a booking to both teams?
Well, I don't know how you litigate that. I'm talking about this specific incident of yesterday where this is happening right in front of an umpire. Like, to be fair to them, if this happened right in front of a linesman, would it have been called correctly? I'd give him a better chance. But still, like, we've had this conversation before where linesmen aren't exactly there to help referees in some cases.
There's a row happening on Twitter. Not a row, but a discussion. Actually, I'm sorry, I've completely misframed that. There is a discussion happening on Twitter. Aidan O'Rourke tweeted yesterday, the comical situation where refs pluck umpires from their social circle, irrespective of competency, has been deciding matches for years. That nothing has been done about it is both baffling and telling. The response from David Goff says, and the solution, ? So apparently David Goff does use family members to umpire for him, and they apparently do a great job. They're his eyes and ears across the pitch, so he's got them well trained.
Yeah. Well, David Goff is probably the best referee in the country at this point, and I'd say that comes from having eyes and ears everywhere and having a good team around him.
Yeah, and I'm sure he sets the tone, sets the standard, but that's not necessarily... The solution is to have qualified referees be umpires or referees in training to be umpires for all these games. So you're giving them access to big games, you're giving them more demands, and they're not like there for the ride. Like, I don't know what the truth is about how you litigate for this, though, really. Unless it's a replay. Like,
potentially. Like, I don't want to. This is obviously not a new incident. I think it's probably high profile because it was a yellow card that resulted in a red, and it was on television, and it was David Clifford. There was his reaction. I do not want to say for a second that this was the reason why Kerry lost that game yesterday at all. This was, you talk about the Dork of Edendork, the man who wasn't the Dork of Edendork yesterday was Darren McCurry, who of course is from Edendork. He was absolutely amazing. And Tyrone are excellent.
Tyrone are back.
Well,
you like the Irish rugby team.
You mentioned Aidan O'Rourke there, and obviously I disagreed with him vehemently in his views on Kerry during the league last year. I think if he copied and pasted his column from last year and did it this year, he would actually have a more concrete case to make.
That's the worst apology I've ever heard. You were right, Aidan O'Rourke. I was wrong.
He said that Kerry wasted the league last year, which is obviously nonsense. But the defensive frailties that have been pointed out are starting to return.
The defensive patterns hadn't emerged properly over the league, and if they don't fix that, they will have wasted the league. And here you are saying that they don't have a defence.
Darren McCurry was in acres of space on many an occasion yesterday, so definitely concerns footballing-wise. This is not the reason. The David Clifford thing is not the reason why Tyrone won the game yesterday.
But it didn't help.
No, it's just extremely frustrating to see this incident happen in isolation.
Last question on this. Is it not a bad thing that, is it not actually a good thing that this has happened to Clifford now in the league?
Yes, absolutely.
There's a crash course in what to do and how to get rid of it. And also for his teammates to appreciate, hang on a second now, when this guy is on the booking, which is going to happen again because he does play in the edge, you all need to, when a sub comes in, you need to make sure that you're in his face going, you do this, we'll kill you. We'll absolutely... And I don't mean literally, but I mean metaphorically. They're like, yeah, come on, let's see what you have.
But this is not the first time that he'll have been presented with the situation. See, I'd say this is probably part of his frustration, is that he's been trained to deal with this. His arms out is a reaction to what he's learned from, say, Stephen McManaman constantly verbally and physically at him in the Super 8s game last year. Don't want to pick on a non-Kerry player. Like, you look at the Dingle versus East Kerry brawl that broke out a couple of years ago that came as a result of targeting. So that happens from Kerry players to David Clifford as well.
So he knows about it.
He's been trained in this, and still he's falling victim to this. So I'd agree with you to a point. It's good that it's happening now rather than when it really matters.
All right, and also the umpires keep an eye on it, so we probably get an easy ride for a couple of weeks, you'd hope. And then the championship, you go in and have a chat with the umpires. 7:41 this morning here on OTBM. The Irish women's rugby side sit atop of the Six Nations table this morning. Adam Grigg's side recorded their second win in as many games yesterday with a 31-12 victory over Wales at Energia Park in Donnybrook. Wild weather conditions, absolutely fine and sunny in the first half as Ireland were running in the tries, and then Storm Ciara arrived and it was like collapse scrum after collapse scrum. And then there were no hot showers for the Welsh women's team for ages afterwards. So it's the first time since February 2018 that Ireland recorded back-to-back Six Nations wins. Hooker Cleanan Maloney was talking afterwards. He said it was very important. Yesterday's game, the IRFU issued an apology to the Welsh team after their players had no hot water in their showers. The statement, which was released yesterday evening, said there was an issue with the water heater in the changing room and every effort was made to resolve the problem. They added that extra amenities were provided and thanked the team for their understanding. So don't think the Welsh men's team had the same issue in the Aviva. I think they had hot showers after we pummeled them on Saturday, but there you go. France followed up their victory over England in the men's competition with a 35-22 win against Italy in Paris. The French have gone above Ireland at the summit of the table after picking up their bonus point in that one. And Dublin sit top of Division 1 in the Allianz Football League after the weekend's action. Tyrone beat Kerry 14-13. Galway beat Donegal also by a single point, 2-8 to 2-7. Desi Farrell's side are therefore on top on scoring. Elsewhere yesterday, a late Kevin McLaughlin goal at Port Tolchin saw Mayo beat Meath 1-9 to 2-5. In Division 2, Roscommon got their first win, 1-8 to 4 points against Clare at Hyde Park. And Westmeath saw off Fermanagh 10-8 in TEG Cusick Park. In soccer, newly promoted Sheffield United are 2 points from the Premier League's Champions League places. They sit fifth, putting immense pressure on fourth place Chelsea after coming from behind to beat Bournemouth 2-1 at Bramall Lane. Billy Sharp and John Lundstrom scored the goals, and the City-West Ham game at the Etihad was called off after public safety concerns in the poor weather conditions. West Brom have extended their lead at the top of the EFL Championship. They're 4 points clear of second place Leeds after they beat Millwall 2-0. Seamus Power finished up in a tie for 38th at the AT&T Pro-Am in Pebble Beach overnight. He finished with a 2-over par final round of 74, so 2-under for the tournament, 17 shots behind Nick Taylor of Canada, who earned himself a place at the Masters with victory there. Rory McIlroy, top of the official world golf rankings this morning for the first time since 2015. He's leapfrogging Brooks Koepka after last week's action at Pebble Beach. And that is your sports news for this morning. Here's what's coming up on the show. Alan Quinlan coming your way in about 3 minutes' time. Top five stories at 8 o'clock. Anthony Moy is going to join us in the studio to talk to us about the Gaelic football action at the weekend. Sports news coming your way again at 8:40. The best partnerships in sport. If you've got any suggestions for us this week, we're doing football today. And obviously it's a battle between myself and Owen to see who can come up with the best ideas. So stay tuned for that at 8:50. Ireland-Wales fan reaction. Owen's been out and about talking to the Ireland fans and the Wales fans and some Yanks and some Mayo people. And then Phil Egan's been watching some football over the weekend. We're going... Transcontinental at 9:10 for you this morning. Time for the papers. OTB AM. Front page of the Examiner this morning, leading with David Clifford, head and hands, fall guy. And it's an easy target. Clifford sees red as Tyrone reel in Kerry. They've also got reaction from Donal Lennon. Got a question from Jack Anderson. What does GAA actually want football to evolve into? Which I suppose is the question we've all been asking. What is this hybrid international rules game that the advanced mark might end up bringing, or maybe it's not going to be that big a deal at all? Tony McEntee on Friday didn't think it was going to be that big a deal.
What was he saying?
He's saying it's going to be one or two a game. That's going to be it. Defenders won't be selling out for forwards because most forwards can't kick the points that We saw Michael Murphy kick, so if you're going to be taking 10 shots from there, that's not in the scoring zone. Off you go, lads.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be one or two per game per team so far anyway. Back page of the Irish Independent is, when will it stop? Clifford red card after Tyrone targeting sums up Gaelic football's greatest problem, writes Eamon Sweeney. Sexton shows first shoots of the recovery as Schmidt era gets due respect, writes Vincent Hogan. Griggs delight as Ireland come through the storm to see off Wales is the headline on the women's rugby, and McKillop admits he was at breaking point.
RFU shoots down talk of Jones' exit as the front of the Telegraph Sport. England denies South African Erasmus in the frame for coach's job. Six Nations launches investigation into Murrayfield bottle incident. So a bottle was blown up by the storm and lands close to one of the England coaching tickets, and they're like, the Scottish, someone's throwing bottles at us, and it was actually the weather, turns out.
Is that actually the
case? There's definitely footage which shows you it being blustered abound, but you know, Eddie Jones taking on the Scottish fans for booing the kicker. If Scotland just could have sealed the deal, that would have blown the Six Nations up. That would have been, we're lit, but they couldn't do it. Also, Razzie Rasmus to England, yes.
Well,
let's see that.
Just two things there. Razzie Rasmus to England. Did you see Erasmus's video that he tweeted yesterday?
No.
Saying, how can I possibly leave this bunch of players? And he chose like an emotional video of him giving them their instructions before the World Cup final. It's like, that's almost sounds oddly familiar to the time you said you wouldn't leave that particular province that you were looking after in Ireland. But in terms of blowing the Six Nations up, I think England winning is a good result. I think
it's better for the Six Nations.
I think so. Like, it would have been funny, obviously, to see England lose again. Like, endlessly funny. But I think with the way it is now at the moment, you've got a proper three-horse race between Ireland, England and France, and it's fantastic. And obviously Ireland's win at the weekend means they'll at least have a championship to play for come Paris. The Irish Times leads with this fantastic photograph yesterday from the women's game. That is, it's like a Renaissance painting, really. The two of the best photographs, really, you'll see in the newspaper. On the front of the Irish Examiner news section is Mary Lou MacDonald walking into the Cowan Centre. A phenomenal account of all the media there. And then this is definitely the best sports photograph of the weekend. Ireland head for Twickenham with a spring in their step, reads the headline on Gerry Thornley's piece. And Keane diverts controversy as Clifford sees red into Rowan. Peter Keane naturally swatting aside any questions and not really committing any opinion on the officiating in Eden Dork yesterday.
Ali apologises for Snapchat video mocking coronavirus. Dele Alli has apologised for a video that he posted to Snapchat, which was making light of corona. What? Please listen with volume was the heading on the video he made in an airport. He zooms the camera towards an unsuspecting man of Asian appearance before panning to a bottle of antiseptic hand wash, captioned, "This virus gonna have to be quicker than that to catch me." Look, I don't know. I mean, everybody's very worked up about people making jokes. There was a racial element to that, which was the racial profiling. But, like, I don't think Dele Alli meant it. He apologised and he took it down. So hopefully that is over for as far as that goes. And then, obviously, a lot of reports about Sheffield United doing very well.
Royal Wall is the headline on the back of the Irish Mirror this morning. It's Andy McEntee saying, it's one rule for Dublins and big teams and a different rule for the rest. Very annoyed yesterday that the referee blew up in the Meath Mayo match straight after the additional time had been played.
Did you see the end of the Monaghan game?
That's kind of the only section of that game I saw, and like there were stoppages within additional time.
There was a lot of time wasting for Monaghan, which if they had their time back, maybe they wouldn't. And like, I don't know. Maybe I think if Began knows that there is going to be play on when they have the 40 at the end of the match, I think he chips it into somebody in the full forward line and they play keep all. He has a shot and he kicks it dead.
Yeah, he kicks it wide,
And then the Dubs come down the field and score and it's a point. Now, some comeback by the Dubs in the circumstances and like nearly a brilliant win for Banty. Nearly like a signature victory in the condition.
Well, this is their worst result against Dublin for 4 years in the league.
So are they going backwards under Banty?
Like, this is the question we need to be asking.
The London Times, City fixture headache as storm strikes. And then England tickle pink by win. Quinton de Kock is deceived by Adil Rashid in set in Joburg yesterday. England square the one-day series with South Africa. And Ali, sorry for mocking coronavirus. I mean, if he was mocking coronavirus, it's fine. Right.
A lot at stake for Dubs. Cubs, Farrell Hinds summer places up for grabs in final league ties, writes Conor McKeown. That's the headline there. And Clifford sees red as Tyrone Rain in Eden. And Duffy's fitness boost for Ireland. McCarthy will be buoyed by return ahead of playoff.
The Irish Daily Mail, extra pressure player welfare concerns over Seven Nations. So this is the other big story of the weekend, which would make more sense for Razzy Rasmus to be in England to discuss. So it was the Telegraph who had the story first. They were saying that...
It might have actually been the Mail.
All right, on Saturday, Sports Mail broke the story of the ongoing negotiations to include the Springboks after the World Cup in France. So it's going to be a Seven Nations. I mean, maybe it's not really going to be a Seven Nations. Maybe it's going to be a Six Nations and they're booting Italy out. Who knows? There's suddenly, if South Africa come to the table, they're like, we've got, you know, it's a good place to come and it's my food. And they've obviously got a couple of years to try and get their house in order. And then there was talk about moving Japan over for an 8-week period and having them based in one of the countries, maybe Spain, for example, so that Spain adopts Japan and they become part of an extended tournament. And all of a sudden, what are the other two countries doing down there who play rugby? Nothing? Just playing each other?
Australia
and New Zealand.
And Argentina, of course.
Maybe you can just go back to Tri-Nations. But Argentina, it's not a great... It's quite far, isn't it?
Yeah, that's... I can't imagine they'll be too happy. Like, this all kind of points to that World League that was mentioned, doesn't it? It just seems that not enough of the stakeholders agreed to what the calendar could be. Well, I see Brian Moore is writing this morning saying why... should we be thinking more about summer rugby given the conditions on show at the weekend? It is kind of odd that we do travel to the Southern Hemisphere for their winter and that we have all our test rugby up here during our winter.
It was because the ground was too hard in olden times to play rugby. You would be banging your head off the dry ground. Mm. Now we can water the pitches.
Is that the reason why it was? Just for?
I think so, yeah. I think we're not going to be able to water. And I think probably football was the summer game. I'm not sure. You definitely need to...
fact check that one.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll get on Wikipedia ASAP.
Lads, how do I listen on Alexa? Listening through YouTube on my phone is a pain in my backside. You say, Alexa, play OTB Sports Radio on TuneIn. That's what you do. So we've just annoyed everybody who has Alexas who are listening. Watching a bit of Schitt's Creek at the moment, and every time they say Alexa, the Alexa in the corner goes, whoa. Greetings from Sydney, says Danny Cowan on Facebook. How are you doing, Danny? Good night to you. Is it, 8 o'clock in the evening? Was the umpire tweeting while Clifford walking off, or maybe he was looking at the replay? He was doing something, horrible decision, and Clifford genuinely innocent. I'm from Wicklow before anyone says I'm a Kerry man. A disgrace, what happened to Clifford? Turns me off, GAA. Typical Tyrone, still destroying the game. Where's fair play? Children are watching.
I also don't want to get too angry about Tyrone this morning, or Fergal Kelly and Tyrone. It's easy to direct your ire towards them, but you got to do what you got to do when a player's on a yellow card, because these are the rules. Like, don't hate the player and all that sort of stuff. This is the environment with which a tactic like that from Tyrone will succeed. So go and do it. Maybe back page of the Irish Sun is Floody L. Pep Guardiola looking at fixture pile up. Their game, of course, postponed yesterday. And we're coming for blue. Frank, Billy Sharp warned Chelsea that Sheffield United are coming for their Champions League place. They are 2 points behind Chelsea, currently lying in fifth place. It has been an unbelievable season from Sheffield United.
Patrick McHugh says, looking forward to Jared talking about Wales this afternoon, Australian time, Perth. Prince of Wales isn't even Welsh, for God's sake. I mean, it's true. I mean, that was one of the worst performances that Wales have ever put up in Dublin. They were
still
lying.
And still, if Parks grounds that...
Yeah. Ah, look, we got a bit lucky. We definitely got a bit lucky. It's not that we're not finished. Quinny's outside. We'll get to him in 1 second. The star, Kingdom Sea Red, and that's the picture of Clifford giving it to one of the umpires, who does indeed appear to have his phone in his hand checking something. So maybe he's looking back at the TG Carr going, oh, jeez. England, no Andy Wood. Obviously, we're not going to beat England in Twickenham easily. McEntee, it's one rule for Dublin and another for the smaller counties, complained about the extra time in that one. And then tab of the morning to you is the Shinners take it all, is the front page of the Star.
Front page of the Racing Post. Beautiful cover, actually. Altior. Has he still got it? Henderson Ace bids to make winning return at Newbury. And back at the Racing Post is up for grabs. Ireland and Wales looking to enhance Six Nations title credentials.
Irish news for you here. Tyrone boss never lost heart over McShane. I mean, Colin McShane seems to have done himself a good deal.
When he came on yesterday, all the cars in the car park started beeping their horns. It was just a great moment. And at that moment, I was delighted the game was moved to Edendork, because just a good club ground.
Can you see from the cars, or that like a
in two separate sides behind both goals? If you got there early, you could park your car behind and then beep Colin McShane as he came on. Oh, fantastic moment.
Okay, that's it. Do we have one more for you? We don't. No. All right. If anybody wants to get in touch with us, use the hashtag OTBAM. 7:55 this morning. Alan Quinlan is in the studio next. This is what Johnny Sexton and Andy Farrell both had to say after thrashing Wales at the Aviva on Saturday afternoon.
Look, we're trying to look forward, to be honest. We're trying to draw a line under last year, even under 2018, and we're trying to build, we're trying to develop something new, and we're trying to do things slightly differently. And saying that, I think some of the messages that have come out from our camp haven't been taken the way they should be. You know, we've taken a lot of what Joe's done over the last few years, and we've built on it, and we've added bits to it, and to suggest that we've just sort of thrown away everything is just wrong. So we've got a good balance, and we've really improved in some areas, and we've changed the way we do things, which you have to do. You have to develop and adapt. But some of the messages that have gone out haven't been entirely accurate.
Andy, can you talk a bit about the influence of your captain in the game? It seemed like there was a day where.
Well, he's in control, isn't he? He's that's what he's done all his life, and that's what he does best. And with the added responsibility of captaincy, I think it's added to his game. Actually, you talk about the meeting like last night. That's his meeting. You know, for him to do as he sees fit, and the chat all week from the boys that he drags out of them is second to none, because it brings that unity, it brings that honesty, it brings that trust throughout the group. So, I mean, he'll tell you himself whether he's thriving in the role or not, but having seen his last two performances, with last week being the one that he's not played after 8 weeks, is nothing short of sensational, really.
Yeah, Johnny Sexton's ears burning as Andy Farrell talks about him while sitting beside him. It's one of those weird scenarios, Alan Quinlan, where you're asked about your captain. And so what do you think of Quinlan's performance? It's not bad so far. You know, he hasn't said a word, but he's about to now, right?
Well, Andy's incredibly positive, isn't he? Everyone's playing well, even last week. So I think that's what he's trying to do, is pick the players up probably after, you know, the pressure and the expectation and the World Cup and all that kind of stuff. So he's incredibly positive, inspiring type of fella. That's just the way he kind of views things. And it was a good performance, I think. It was a really... Wales made mistakes, and I think that's probably what we need to be careful, that we don't get too far ahead. We've probably made that mistake before, where we've got too optimistic or too positive about the side. But I think the fundamentals were good. I think the...
Maybe we were too pessimistic after the Scotland game?
Possibly, yeah. I think I was very nervous about this game, as many people were, because it takes a little bit of time to understand where each team is in the Six Nations. Wales had such dominance against Italy last week. And
against us last year.
Yeah, yeah.
I know everybody says it's a completely different tournament, but it isn't really. It's like the most recent interaction we've had with them in a competitive game was them killing us over 80
team,
minutes.
Yeah. And a lot of that was down to the pressure they put us under, and the pressure at the breakdown defensively. They were very, very strong. But I think Ireland really kind of intelligently moved the ball pretty well. I thought Robbie Henshaw was outstanding until he went off, and he was getting into a position where he could actually run at Nick Tompkins, get in between the centres or the outside Tompkins, draw in the winger and fend people and get a couple of offloads. And the value of that is really brilliant, because it means that when you hear this term shift in the point of contact, you're now getting to a guy who loves to run with the ball, who's very physical, and he's getting through that little bit of space. That breakdown then is quick. You can get people around the corner. So sometimes we've been guilty, probably a lot in 2019, and it's sometimes it's player decision making on the field about identifying space where it is, and not just shifting it for the sake of it.
Player decision making is the hardest thing to get right in any sport, and everybody always talks about it, but it's a cultural thing. And like, it looks like Andy Farrell is asking players not to stick it up the jumper and run straight.
Yeah, and I don't think Joe actually did say it to him, but I think it was part of a bigger plan that they were going to be so efficient and so good at the breakdown.
There's an obsession with the breakdown.
Yeah, but that even, yeah, and the breakdown was so good that even if they ran into a bit of traffic, that it was going to come back so quick anyway, and eventually teams are going to wear out. So sometimes it's about identifying space in the field, and I've said this for a long time. The individual has the ball in his hand, how he puts a bit of footwork on and trying to wriggle through that little bit of space, because you see a lot of stats now about meters gained and different carries. Well, if you make a metre with the carry, the metre is over the gain line, that ruck is going to be quicker. So it has an added impetus about how you carry the ball and where you, what kind of space you go into. But you see when Henshaw got the ball, he's running onto it and he's hard to tackle because he's strong and he's physical, but he's actually getting through that space.
Yeah.
And it makes a difference. And Ireland just tended to move the ball a little bit more sharply and intelligently, and their backs are running onto it. And I think it made a difference. And it made it harder for Tipperick, who can really change games. He didn't really get near the ball, and Ireland were very conscious of that. I think Ian Henderson, he had one big moment in the first half where Ian Henderson carried the ball and Faletau and Tipperick held him up, and that turns the ball over. It's as good as a turnover at the breakdown. But they were good. Wales made some mistakes, so I think, and that's probably, we can't get away from that fact.
How come Peter O'Mahony and CJ Sander look like new men this year?
I don't know. I think maybe the pressure to find performances for themselves and a determination to play better, I think, is one thing. Because, but I think the team as a unit are probably, there's been a bit of change, not dramatic change, and I think they're all probably understanding their role. They probably all have a little bit more freedom maybe in themselves, and they know that if they don't play well, and that decision was based on the first selection where Peter O'Mahony was dropped, Stander was moved to six. You get a lifeline sometimes like that when you get a kick up the backside, and I think the front five are performing better as well, and I know that from being a back row myself. If your front five are under pressure and not giving you that platform and not hitting those rucks and making those hard yards, it becomes more difficult for the back row. So they have a new spring in their step. I think obviously there's going to be a bigger challenge ahead when they go to Twickenham. So it's positive to see, because the three in the back row, they didn't have big impacts in games in 2019. You just look at Stander, the three big turnovers, should have been a fourth one. I know he got yellow carded at the end, but they're massive moments, they're game-changing moments.
He got yellow carded for the one that was given against him, essentially, because the ref saying that's the second one, but actually there's a dispute about whether the first one was...
There should be no dispute. The first one, the fourth turnover that he would have got under the post was he was absolutely perfectly legal there to do that. I think Roman Pott probably realised a little bit after he made the decision, and he gives the penalty to Dave Kilcoyne for Dylan Lewis.
In the next sequence.
Yeah, and then that really, and that's what won the game, Ger. You had 10, 12 minutes there of defending, and Wales were hammering away for that period of time. Hadley Parks.
Second week in a row, we get a bit of luck, like a lot of luck.
And it would have been a very frustrating try to concede. Hadley Parks is brilliant at running that line. He did it in the World Cup warm-up in Dublin in August. And, you know, you can see what he's going to do. See it a mile away.
Camera angle was great in that one, because you can see, oh, look. Ah!
And all the players are looking in, and Peter O'Mahony scrags him in the legs. But
let's go back to Poit. If we'd lost this game, there would have been a lot of... annoyance at Poit. As it is, the level of annoyance dissipates because we win the match and we're not really that worried about it. What's the relationship between Sexton and Poit? How is that captaincy performance working for you?
I didn't think Poit got a lot wrong. I think he got clearly, and I think he looked back at it himself and said that was wrong decision, the Stander one. But I don't think he got a lot wrong, to be honest. The relationship between Johnny Sexton himself was tetchy at times. I think the one that probably frustrated Johnny Sexton the most was the maul in the first half, where Ireland were going close to the line and Wales kind of held them up, and you could say the Wales players flopped down the ball. But it's happening in every maul. I was doing France Italy yesterday. It's happening in every game.
Yeah, you were saying you would have done
the same thing. And I think there needs to be some sort of a law change around the maul, because it's just carnage. And it's actually some people can say it's discouraging people from actually using the maul out the field. But, you know, when you can hold on and the maul twists around and you're on the opposition side and you can grab people and then you
can fall.
It's so hard to get the ball right back to the back of the maul nowadays.
You're technically not collapsing, you're pulling it down.
And that was right. That was the correct decision. And that was the one Johnny Sexton came in and had some words with him.
I want my captain to do that.
Well, I tell you, there's one of the probably things that I loved playing under Paul O'Connell or Anthony Foley or Mick Galway or Dricko was that they had that presence. They had that, they're pushing it with the referee. And I think that's really important, because you have to let the referee know that it's not just the players in the field. Everybody's watching this, and you have to put pressure on them around some decisions, and some of the best captains have done that continuously over the years.
So when Stander got pinged for that, he was Sexton was relatively calm and said, can I ask you something? And he goes, yeah, go on. And then there's that interaction where he's like, they're flopping down, he has to go over them. Are we allowed to go over those players when they're no longer active?
Yeah.
And at least Poit goes, I'll have a look at it.
Yeah,
and suddenly
fairness,
it's in his head, and the next time it happens,
it's probably sometimes the way. Sometimes you have to bring in a bit of calmness. Other times you have to use the body language or the bit of pressure. It's really important, because Poit is a very experienced referee, and he is quite tetchy himself and narky at times. And we know Johnny's personality is like that, and sometimes he gets the perception of maybe the way he interacts with the referees and has done before comes against him a little bit. I thought he was fine. The one with the maul was the one I thought, it's a clear turnover against Ireland, and there is no question to be asked. You know, saying the players flopped in, it's done. It's the law allows them to do that until we have a law change around the maul. So I really thought Johnny Sexton was outstanding in that defensive set. It was unbelievable. If you watch it back, the amount of tackles he put in, impact tackles, on big players running hard lines, and you know, he's just full-blooded, full-spirited in everything he does, and he was brilliant. He was brilliant, and he led the team really well. And I think he's when Sexton plays well, Ireland play well. And I've said this about Murray. Murray was outstanding as well. So
Murray played his best.
But it's
game
on
for
the
Ireland.
Back of Gerard. It's on the back of the pack delivering. You know what I mean? If you have a pack of forwards who deliver, it's so much easier for a halfback. So I think right across the board, it was a very, very good performance.
Furlong and Healy played well early on as well, carrying
and
smashing. And
Rob Herring has been really energetic.
Rob Herring looked international class.
Well. Yeah, he's playing really well. And so there's a lot of positives, but Wales made mistakes. There's no doubt about that. But our pressure and our enthusiasm and our aggression in defence was very good. And I think that sets us on. It creates that bit of luck sometimes that you need.
We kind of dominated the first half, and Wales scored their first time up there, and then looked dangerous every time they got up
there.
That
after was the worry, wasn't it?
So, like, is that just because, you know, you're not going to win
because
again?
Because Wales are a good side as well, and you know, Alan Wynne Jones. I think initially people thought it might have been forward. Then the bigger pass to Williams, I didn't think either were forward. When I looked back at them, it was a try, and. You know, again, that's not ideal for a team. You want to try and defend those things better. Alan Wynne-Jones runs a brilliant line, and he's hard to stop. Gets a great offload, and they're capable of doing that.
They are, yeah.
This is a team in the World Cup they played incredible rugby against Australia. They possibly should have beaten South Africa. They could have been in the World Cup final. They hammered us last year. So without getting too far ahead, it was a very, very good win. There's a different feel to the team. They seem to have a little bit more energy, and I think a slow return to maybe is much better than maybe what we saw against Scotland in Yokohama, where it was this incredible performance against Scotland. Looking back now, Scotland were really poor. So I think there's a slow build here, and there's certainly plenty to work on. So you look at the lineup where Thomas Williams knocks the ball on, Furlong scores, the Hadley Parks one. But I think Ireland, they were playing enough of good rugby to indicate that they're on a different path here, and they're on a positive path.
Conway, I think, really, everybody who's been banging the drum to get Conway in the team for the last couple of years, this is the performance we wanted to see from him, and he was excellent, kind of flawless almost.
Yeah, he was.
that right foot chopped kick that goes about 70 metres.
The drop-off, the one he wins where he's no right to this, two Welsh forwards there, and he comes straight up and springs in the air. He's so good in the air. A bad kick sometimes can be turned into a good kick with a really good chase. And he did that at one stage in the second half where Conor Murray...
Yeah,
I wouldn't say it was a bad kick. The wind took it a little bit away. So Jared Evans catches it and he's about to take off thinking, I've got a bit of space here. And Conway comes out of nowhere and chops him onto the ground. The Irish players then are trying to poach the ball. Sexton was one of them. And then suddenly Wales are having to retreat back around and try and get some shape and say, what are we going to do here? And where do we go to? So, you know, those kind of kicks can really turn into... I'd still love to see Jacob Stockdale contest a little bit more in the air. He's an incredible athlete, and he has unbelievable ability going forward. Just a little bit more physicality out of him. But that back three look really, really dangerous now.
We have now seen everybody who's in form getting their shot for Ireland, except for one player, which is Will Addison, and that's because of his own injury troubles. I would love to see a back three of Addison, a full back, and see what Larmour and Conway can do on the wings. Italy is probably the game for that, and I don't think Jacob Stockdale has been bad enough to be dropped. I thought he was actually decent
at the
weekend.
No, he hasn't.
It's still a back three that I think would be a very exciting prospect, and something that if we are calling this a regeneration project or whatever under Andy Farrell, I think it's probably something he should look at.
Well, I said at the start of the tournament that someone with Will Addison's ability and his talent, you'd love to have him in the team somewhere. I think he's played really well with Ulster this year, and that would excite everybody if you had, or even had a look at it, like you say, with Addison fullback and Conway and Larmour. Earls came on as well. You know, you could drop him into either one of the wing positions as well. So there's genuine pace there, there's counter-attacking ability, and it's another part of the game that maybe Ireland weren't great at in the last couple of years. Is that counter-attack and that ability, just individual brilliance. I think Conway, to be fair to him, probably wasn't as consistent before when he got those couple of opportunities. He was very unlucky with some injuries, but he's a brilliant footballer. He's a really intelligent player. He puts those kicks in behind when he's about to be tackled. He's just 110% in everything he does, defensively very strong as well. He did make a mistake last week coming up and in for Stuart Hoggs. Yeah. Knock on, but
is that not their philosophy though? Is that not their, are they not told to gamble on that kind of stuff? It's like,
yeah,
no, they're not. Yeah,
I always say you got to tag the ball or the man, and if you come up and in, if you don't, you look a little bit silly. But look, that's nothing to do with. He'll know that himself. He was outstanding, Andrew Conway, at the weekend.
David Kinsman's dropped us a comment. How does Quinny call the England-Ireland game based on what we've seen so far from both teams? An annoyed Eddie Jones and annoyed England still managing to grind out an away win in the Six Nations.
Yeah, very physical, I think. And, you know, the likes of Atoje and Cruz and
a 6-2 split.
Tom Curry and all these guys. Vunipola was back. Ellis Genge off the bench. They have a lot of power, but I think they are a different team without Billy Vunipola and Tuolangi. So there's optimism going there, but I think it's going to be very difficult for Ireland because I don't want to over egg the physicality side of it, because it gives off maybe the wrong impression. What I mean is, you just have to make sure that you're in the, anytime you ever play against England, you've got to be physically right for the game, because they have that power, and they showed that at the World Cup. So if Ireland can get on the front foot, they're certainly capable of building and being better.
Yeah, it was another power team who beat them, though, who destroyed them in the scrum after in South Africa. I mean, like, it wasn't a team who played nice rugby around them.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Ireland, the 7-point underdogs as it stands.
And that's probably about right. I think Ireland can get better, I think, and this will do their confidence the world of good. It's going to be very tricky. I think England will be rightly favourites in that game. And
changes from that team? Is anybody in any danger at the moment of being dropped?
I wouldn't go, you know, when you have such a good win like that. I think Dave Kilcoyne, his effort off the bench was very positive. But I think you need someone like Keane Healy. Probably didn't have as many big moments in the game that we know he's capable of. Kilcoyne possibly could put him under a bit of pressure there. But nowhere else really, I think, because I just think they performed really well. And what was really pleasing as well, Ger, was the impact off the bench. You know, Kilcoyne, Kelleher.
What was Kelleher like?
Didn't get a huge amount of opportunities, but he just looks a beast. He looks a really powerful athlete, and he needs to play matches. I'm not sure. Maybe he'll play with Leinster or have half a game this week.
Because bear in mind, he hasn't played, really.
He hasn't played, no.
Yeah, he's still got the cast on the hand.
He's had no rugby, and so I wouldn't see any changes in the side.
Any fear of France's pack or their young halfbacks? Asks Powerbite 92.
Any fear that France played them?
No, yeah, I guess that's like France's pack. Are France's pack great? Are their young halfbacks great? That's the implication.
They're
very
talented, inexperienced. I think they have vulnerabilities around their scrum, and we haven't they were very good against England. Sloppy yesterday, which can happen when you when you're expected to win very easily. Their real test is going to Cardiff now the next day for France. We'll know a lot more about them after that.
You're not getting carried away. Is this like a 7.5 out of 10 or an 8 out of 10?
In the World Cup in 4 years, maybe. It's definitely a 7 or 8 out of 10. I think it's a vast improvement, and we just call what we see on Saturday. So they deserve the credit for that. And I thought it was, it's very encouraging. I'd love to see a little bit more. I'd love to see Will Ellison in the team, like Owen was saying, or somewhere close to it. Keith Earls was brilliant as well when he came on. So there's certainly a lot of positives. The concern for me would be, and maybe it's something that's going to take time to build, is that bit of a ruthless edge when they get into good positions, that they actually come away with a score, even if it's only 3 points.
It took us a long time to build up our score.
Yeah, and there was turnovers in that first half that I thought could come back to haunt us. In 2018, it's the barometer of where they were. They were very, very ruthless when they got into the 22, and they came away with a score nearly every time. So it'll take a little bit of time to build that. But that was a worry. That was my worry on Saturday, that they got in great positions at times and Wales turned them over.
Good stuff, Alan. Thanks for that. We've a fortnight now to the England game, but obviously we'll be talking more about this across the rest of the week. If you have any views on it, you can use the hashtag OTBAM. 16 minutes past 8 here on OTBAM. We're going to be back with Anthony Moyes in studio in a couple of minutes. Back with our top 5 stories next.
OTBAM.
Brought to you by Pandora. Find the perfect gift this Valentine's Day.
18 minutes past 8 here this morning. Our top 5 stories. Eddie Jones, the Dubs, they're come back from the dead against Monaghan to snatch a draw at home on Saturday evening. Shane Ross has lost his seat, no longer Minister for Sport. What do we want from the next Minister for Sport? We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Carlo Ancelotti and GA Clock. What's the GA Clock one?
Well, Andy McEntee is not happy about the additional
time. Good the way
time.
We've got to guess what these top 5 stories are when you see the... What is that one again? Okay.
Like, it is something that has been... why hasn't this been trialled? In league football, because
it's in the women's game.
Exactly, we have it in a version of the sport. I just don't understand why this hasn't been trialled before, and it's just a bit of an annoyance. I'm kind of leaning towards the fact that the referee on Saturday night in Dublin, Monaghan, got it right.
Yeah. I thought so too, yeah.
And then the referee yesterday for Meath Mayo perhaps wasn't correct. Now, I didn't see the full Meath Mayo, obviously, it's only highlights you get, so you don't know exactly how many stoppages there are. But I don't imagine Andy McEntee is...
He blew it up on the whistle in 4 minutes.
Yeah, and like...
Maybe there were no stoppages, you know? Maybe everybody was absolutely perfectly behaved in the last 4 minutes. Because that happens in every... here's the ball to take out a quick kick out.
Anthony says at least 90 seconds were required. How long would a GEA game take with a stoppage?
90 minutes, it'd be great. And the tension would be unbearable and it would be a sensational spectacle.
The Dubs would be absolutely masters of minding the clock. Like, they can do it even without the stoppage. Or what are we calling it? The Hooter system? Is that what we're calling it? I can't even remember what it was called. Rugby timing. Let's call it that.
No, let's not, because there's no chance of succeeding at that point. It's like...
Champions League format.
We can take it from American football. Would that be okay? Is that far enough away?
Aussie rules are the only things we're allowed to
say. There's a row breaking out... gently in our Twitter comments this morning. We were talking about how long until we hear David Clifford's name was off the ball AM, our selling point, and then Night Owl goes, a disgrace, what happened to Clifford? Clearly a Kerry fan. Turns me off GA, typical Tyrone, still destroying the game. Where's fair play? F capitalised. Children are watching! ! And then Owl Hand, which is a big red hand. Tyrone says no. The children watch Kerry play act to get heart sent off and the verbal harassment of umpires by a child throwing a tantrum. Oof. Come on.
There was a Tyrone.
Let's be having you. Tyrone, Kerry. Are they in the... They're not on the same side. They're not even going to meet in the Super 8s this year, are they?
Well,
they might do if Tyrone don't win.
If Tyrone don't win. A Tyrone fan approached us on the bank in Eden Dork yesterday, took off his cap, it looked like he was going to throw it on the ground and was like, you may as well take the ref home with you. And he stormed off.
A Tyrone fan?
Yeah.
To you guys?
Yeah, but not like he wasn't directing it. He was just looked for the nearest Kerry sporting contingent.
Well, sure, look. What story are we doing here?
We're going to talk about Eddie Jones. There's a couple of different things about Eddie Jones over the course of the weekend. Like at the start, you had this incredible interview on BBC Sport with Sonny McLaughlin, and she was like constantly, did you see this?
No.
This video where she's like, why do you say the things that you say? And he was like, what are you talking about? And constantly came back to it, why do you say the things? And, she's like, you're an intelligent man, you clearly know why you do the things that you do. And eventually he kind of goes down and he's like, okay, well, I want to kind of create the theatre of sport and creating this narrative around opposition. And it was actually a little bit of the curtain being pulled back into the mind of Eddie Jones a little bit, that, like, I thought last week some of the words being used in the build-up to the Calcutta Cup was a little bit OTT. Like, he'd spoken before the France game about brutality and bullying the French, and even some of his players last week were kind of talking about they hate us and we hate them, and there was some very strong language going into it. And it was just interesting to hear that Eddie Jones for the first time saying, yeah, well, this is kind of part of my plan, this is always something that I want to bring on match week. Now, was the performance something that matched that? I'm not so sure. He kind of came out afterwards and said it was one of his most satisfying wins as England coach.
This one?
Yeah. Probably to do with the fact that it was played in ridiculous conditions. I would have thought that beating the All Blacks in the World Cup was probably a bit more of a satisfying win as a head coach.
And they didn't seal the deal.
He didn't seal the deal is correct. Like you were saying at the top of the show, that perhaps the Scotland win would have blown things wide open. I think this sets us up amazingly for a Twickenham clash. And I'm actually a little bit surprised that England are 7-point favourites given their start to the tournaments. I would have actually expected them to just be, granted it's only a small change, but I would have expected them to have the same favouritism as Ireland had going into the Wales game. They've had 4 points. And I think we're in for an absolute corker. Like, I wonder what Eddie Jones is going to target. Like, what is the most targetable thing in the Ireland squad if you're the opposition head coach?
Scrum isn't looking great at the moment. It's given up some penalties.
But that's a very rugby term. Like, how can he be personal?
Like, but you can, the Italians went after somebody. The Italians went after Marcus Horan. The first year we did our Grand Slam, the Italians, the week of that game, went after Marcus Horan, and Ireland won the first scrum. Marcus Horan did really well, and we killed them in 2009. I vaguely remember this because it was like a thing in one of the books. Like, I have no recollection of this game. I don't remember anything about it, but I remember the Irish team turned it into something because, I don't know, was it Castrovani or somebody else had gone, Horan's not a great scrummager, and then they swatted them aside, and I still don't remember the game. I presume they won well, but
I actually don't remember.
You can say that so and so is binding illegally. So we got done very early on in the game against Wales for a penalty
deep inside their own territory.
Yeah, so like if you're, and the scrum won so much for England over the period of time, and they can point to the fact that Sinclair gets knocked out at the start of the game, and that's why we lose the World Cup. It's nothing to do with us being an inferior team. It's just that our scrum fell apart because we didn't have enough depth.
But possibly. Did Ireland do to Wales last at the weekend what England did to us last year? The sort of backlash from a poor previous calendar year. Now, granted, England had a lot.
We didn't beat the crap out of them.
We didn't, but...
Did we?
Like, England probably...
I haven't watched the game back. I just watched it once, so I don't know. It didn't feel like we were beating the crap out of them physically. It felt like we were being clever. It definitely felt like we were killing them. Just not on the scoreboard, and then, Wales are coming back into this.
The sort of unexpected height of the performance, maybe? I don't think, like, the bearing that last year's hammering had on this team, it was clearly greatly exaggerated. We'll hold our hands
Wales
up.
Hammering.
A very similar group of players.
No hangover.
Have managed to completely turn that around in less than a year.
Professional sport is weird, and rugby is even weirder in that, like, I did not feel like we were going to go in and win that game. I just didn't feel like we were going to win that game on the basis of the Scottish performance. And then all of a sudden, you know, we start really well and we're controlling the ball and we're doing all the things that, man, we haven't done this in a long time. We look really good here. That matters. So I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see exactly what happens next. Right, Anthony Moyles in the studio next. Here's Seamus McEnany and Desi Farrell speaking with Oisín Langan for BBC Radio Ulster.
Seamus, have you drawn one you should have won?
Listen, we felt we lost by a pint in Galway, and we could have got a pint there. But listen, if so far in the National Football League has been really good for Monaghan, we're delighted how the process is going with 3 pints out of 6. And we come here tonight playing the 5-time All Ireland champions. They're not easy beat here. That's why they're All Ireland champions. They're the best team in the country for long periods, and they're difficult to beat.
Desi Farrell, Dublin manager, considering you were, I think, 10 points down at one stage, it was at the very least 9. Does getting a draw out of that game kind of feel like getting a win?
Yeah, you could look at it from that perspective. I think just getting the result, we were very, very happy with. Ultimately, we weren't good in the first half. It was very, very poor performance, and we just wanted to be much more competitive in the second half. And to be fair to the players, they show great character and the hunger and desire to drive on in that second half and make a game of it and ultimately eke out a point.
Why weren't you good in the first half?
It's hard to put your finger on that. Just we were sort of a bit ponderous, sort of slow, not really getting to the pitch of it. Just tempo wasn't good, and we struggled. But second half, intensity much better. Chalk and cheese, really, from that perspective. So we'll be looking for more of the second and less of the first.
It's Desi Farrell speaking with Oisín Langan for BBC Radio. Well, Anthony Moyes is with us this morning. Anthony, where do you want to start? A decent weekend football, considering the atrocious weather conditions.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. Festival of football. My wife was complaining yesterday. She's like, how many more games are you going to watch today? It's just like YouTube, TG Cahir, RTE. Just keep going on. It was great. I think like Dublin, obviously, and Monaghan on Saturday night was interesting, to say the least. I think Monaghan are obviously, look, I mean, they looked like a team that were at full tilt. You know, each of the players looked extremely conditioned and fit, and they were flat out right from minute one. And they could have won the game. They should have won the game if they'd put more of their chances away in the first half. Like, I mean, they easily probably kicked away, I think, 1-7 in the first half. There was a point they got where I think the halfback kicked it, and he easily could have just come in for a goal. I don't know if you remember that in the first about 10 minutes. And then some of their shot selection in the second half, which has been a bit of an Achilles heel for them over the last number of years, that really came back to haunt them.
Can you fix that?
Well, like people would say they have an over-reliance, obviously, on McManus. And when you have a guy that good, there's always going to be an over-reliance on him because you're going to give him the ball. But as a matter of fact, I would have tried to give him the ball more on Saturday night. You know, he got on a good bit of ball, but there was a few guys taking shots, and you really would have said, listen, that's outside your scope. It's not in your locker. Try to find the inside man, because he's so lethal when he comes around, especially on a night like that where it's slippy. You know, he's able to come around the corner, just take it off. The referees all over the weekend, we won't even go near the timing thing yet, but the referees were quite, you know, because when it's wet and if a fella pulls and you go down, you're nearly going to get the free.
Yeah.
And the likes of him would have been able to pull a couple of frees out of the bag. And it's kind of like, when you come up against Dublin, especially in a situation like that, Monaghan have done well against them in the last number of years, but you're flying along, you really should be saying to yourself, right, we need to take these, because Dublin looked to me like they had done a really heavy week. They were leggy, they were completely disinterested. Like if you watch, what Monaghan do is, they try to counter-attack you very quickly. So once they receive the ball from you in their own defence, basically everyone goes. It doesn't matter. A full-back could go, a cornerback could go. It doesn't matter. Fellas go. And they go beyond the kind of next line, if you get me, beyond the half-forward line of Dublin, and they go into midfield. So once they get one pass away, they look to kick it over that kind of blanket, if you get me, into space, and then they have runners. And they did that really, really well the other night. Guys literally tearing up the field. Like the centre-half back got a couple of scores from doing that, just going, you know, and it really worked out well for them. Like they got a few breaks of the ball where the ball just ended up popping out in front of fellas that had gone advanced. But in the second half, Dublin really pressed them in their own half. So Dublin, you could see the intensity of the tackle right away after half-time was increased, and they were hunting them and chasing them, and they're making it much more difficult for them to come out. And then Dublin started to get a bit of joy from that. It's a risky game that Monaghan play, because if I have the ball over in the corner and, you know, you have now gone past me, I don't have that simple little pass back. I now, the onus is on me to try and find my way out and to get the ball to you, and if I don't get it to you, we're now a couple of numbers down.
It's funny because I didn't see the whole game, but I rewound and watched the last 15 minutes when they were trying to play keep ball in their own defence. It was almost like they weren't used to it, that there wasn't enough numbers around, and they were getting caught as they had a 7-point lead. It became a 6-point lead. It became a 5-point lead. It was like, oh shit.
Yeah, and it's a bit of both. I think what, like, Banty would have always wanted, he wants to exit really quickly, you know, and that's his thing. So he wants to get out of there at pace very, very, very quickly, either by hand or by foot. So his thing would be that, you know, if Owen has it and I'm close by and you're inside, you're gone. You are now not a real help to him. Whereas other teams will say, listen, well, we'll have a man here that if Owen gets in trouble, he can come back to me and then we'll keep it spread.
And have
a bit of protection.
Yeah.
Whereas it's a bit more risky.
And you need to play situationally. Like, you need to be, what happens if we're 7 points up with 5 minutes to go? Let's just kill the game. Pass, run. But they couldn't do it.
Especially because Beggan is so good on the ball.
That's the thing.
He's a perfect 16th man, yeah. 15th man.
Absolutely. Yeah, he is. And what they should have done is probably brought it up and just, like, I mean, he was unbelievable. Like, I mean, a special mention has to be said for him. Like, he's unnerving. Like, some of the frees he kicked were just unbelievable. But then these kickouts as well. Like, myself and Morgan, I watched both of them very closely over the weekend. Like, and I've had this idea, remember we mentioned it a couple of years ago, that, you know, you really should train kids who want to go on goal to be able to kick left and right foot. You know, it should be imperative. They should be able to stand right behind the ball. And although the camera angle wasn't great, I was trying to watch himself and Morgan. And the two of them start very much
straight.
Yeah, it's very difficult as a midfielder. No, you don't. Yeah. Like, I mean, and especially Beggan. You know, he's standing directly behind the ball, and only at the last second of a run-up does he switch his shoulders and fire it out right or left. And it's extremely difficult. You know, if you have any kind of a pattern where you're moving the opposition midfielders to his left, and then you have a guy bolting out right, and he's well able to find it. He has a massive range. He's able to do the short ones, and he's able to get beyond a lot of the opposition, the defence that the press that they put on. But then from dead ball, like, he's just unnerving. Like, some of the boomers he kicked. Himself and Morgan were fantastic, I thought.
Is there a chance that Dublin are just messing with all of us, and that they're so good at, you say, situational football, that they just want to get out alive from all of these league games? They're like, 10 points down, no problem. Whatever, 3 points down against Kerry, no problem. A few points down against Mayo at the start, no problem. Like, they will always win these All-Ireland finals by either drawing the first game and winning the replay by a point, or winning the first game by a point. They just, like, they, in actual fact, they're maybe 20 points better than everybody,
like,
but they're so good at
copper,
just...
helicopter sounds and an LSD flashback to Nam here, is that
what it is? Yeah, basically. Like, I just wonder if this whole notion that we have of, like, these underperformances from Dublin in All-Ireland finals are actually the exact opposite, that they're so good in All-Ireland finals, that they're so chilled out about it, that they're like, right, 5 minutes to go, grand, let's win this game by a point.
I'd hate to think it is like that. I really would, because that would really be the death knell of the game. I definitely think that was the case on Saturday. Like, I mean, they were absolutely, if you watch some of the body language of the likes of Scully and Howard, who would be seen as being their energy guys, and Kilkenny, it was just non-existent in the first half. Like, they were letting Monaghan guys just fly past them. And, you know, and when you're coming up against a team, and the reason why I'm saying that against Monaghan, when you're half-baked against that, right, I come in to challenge you, Ger. And as I'm coming in to challenge you, the challenge isn't really crisp. So you've now got the ball away to the guys who've gone, and then everyone is cut, and everyone is just chasing back, and the scores are going over. And you're kind of going, what's wrong? But the actual source of it is not being stopped. When they really got up to it, and you could see right from the throw-in, they started kind of hitting a few fell. They showed their intent, and the intent was massively different. Never mind the breeze and all that stuff, but the intent was there, and they got a fair kicking. I'd say they looked disinterested, as I thought. They looked like they had done a really heavy week, and when they needed to turn it on, they did turn it on. But then they, you know, again, the quality that they were able to bring in. Mm-hmm. Like, Bugler, I think, is one who will be...
Real deal.
The real deal. He's a big individual. He's well able to motor. He's very confident. His scores were excellent. Like the I think it was the equalising score that he got, or the one before, where he just, like, it was like, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
He didn't look to anyone else. He literally took the responsibility on. You know, and I think obviously McMenamin caused problems when he came in too. But that's what they can do. I thought McCarthy was unbelievable. I thought he was one fella in the first half and second half who just put the shoulder to the wheel.
Footballer of the Year contender, of course. Mm-hmm. Has Anthony ever got a man sent off a la Ben McDonald or on David Clifford in Dungannon? Comes the slightly loaded question from somebody this morning. It's not from Owen, it's from somebody else. It's from an anonymous user.
No, come on, you must have.
You're a wily old fox, and at the end of your career, I'm going to go in there and that kid now, he's already got a yellow. We'll start a little row. Boom.
Yeah, no, I don't think I did, actually.
You'd send somebody else to do that.
Yeah. Why do the dirty work when you know you have someone else? Look, it was, you know, it's funny. You couldn't really see the incident until they obviously went back on the previous incident with, I can't remember who it was, maybe it was Gainey, but there were the camera angle, and it was ridiculous. But it was the umpire who called it.
Mm.
The referee wasn't going to go there, and the umpire called him in and said, you know, obviously saw. And my issue with umpires is, and I know it's been said a lot, but umpires are generally from the nucleus of the friends or family of the referee. That is simply it. I don't know if you have to have any qualifications. I know referees have to go and do the referees courses and all that stuff. I doubt umpires do. And generally, linesmen are referees, right? So the two lads on the sideline have got all their qualifications, but the four, which is actually the majority of the eyes in the game, don't.
And the most powerful in that they can actually signal to the referee that they've seen something.
Seen something. The worst as a fullback or as a cornerback, and this is getting into the cornerback brigade, but so Owen is the corner forward, he pulls me, I then pull him, and the umpire sees me pulling him, calls him in free, easy free, right? So there's always, like, an umpire has a situation where I don't even know where they look. I don't know if they're just viewing what's going on in front of them with the six guys in front of them. I don't know if they're viewing up the field. I actually don't even know what their MO is.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what exactly are they there to do? Is it just to keep an eye on the post and
well,
make sure
we have two
scored?
Of them. We have two of them. One of them should be the post person, and the other should be the what's happening in the 21. And that should be like, do you see anything that's worthy of a foul either way? And you keep an eye on that. Because that would if that was their job and you knew that you were being watched, then, and the other one could just stand behind the goal instead of stand beside it and go, yeah, that was a point, that wasn't a point, yeah. That was a point.
And I'd say most of them, what happens is they end up watching the game.
Yeah.
Right.
Best seats in the house.
Like, supporter. Like, I'm not being bad, but I think that's generally what happens. So in a situation like what's happened the other night, you obviously see that Clifford is walking back. There's a bit of something going on. You call the referee and go, listen, he's been, you know, the cornerback has had a go at him. Just have a word with both of them. Calm it down.
There's a pair of the minute ref, I'd say, yeah, booking for each of them.
And then, well, that's it, right? But so the referee then obviously needs to use his common sense when he comes in and goes, well, I definitely know Clifford's on a yellow. Does he really deserve to be red, you know, gone for this? I'm not so sure myself. I didn't see it. So you just go in and you have a word and you just say, right, look, fellas, calm it down.
I was making the case to Owen earlier, though, that, like, it's impossible to... If there's no sanction for that wrestling on the ground, then you're going to see a lot more of it. Like, the booking to... The reason the booking to both of them exists is because it happens so often that if you don't do anything, somebody will start that fight in loads of situations and there's no punishment for it. In situations like this where somebody's already booked, it's completely ridiculous. But it serves a purpose to book both of them in that it stops everybody else from just turning it into a dragon and pulling game.
Yeah, I suppose it does. Like, I mean, I'm kind of on the fence with that because I think if that's your game as a defender and you're going to spend a lot of the time on the ground and very little time doing anything else, right?
That might be okay. So if I'm marking David Clifford and we spend most of our time on the ground and he scores 3 points instead of 7 points, that's a big win for me.
Yeah, you can look at it. You can definitely argue with that, absolutely. But I think where it becomes, where just me holding on down becomes, well, potentially yellow card offence or something like that is that if, you know, I have to physically put my elbow on him or something like this, or my hand goes up onto his throat or something. Because
and how does he stop you doing that, though?
Well, he obviously has to, yeah,
and then he
physically
gets
manage you. Yeah, exactly. You know? So it is, it's the referee, no doubt. I thought. Look, the referees probably had a tricky enough time the weekend with the conditions. But what ends up happening is, and again, we don't want to talk about referees all the time. But what ends up happening is there's no real consistency level. One guy plays it that well. It's wet and dirty ball. So anything that's on the ground, I'm going to blow it and give frees. You know, I thought some of the frees in the Tyrone Kerry game were really, really cheap. You know, they were like some of the frees that Kerry got in the first half against Tyrone, where they were just running into bodies.
100%, yeah.
And it was like, oh, and you could see the Tyrone fellas were getting frustrated and frustrated. And I was saying to myself, this thing is going to boil over here. All it'll take is an incident. And the frustration levels rise. And then the opposite happened with Kerry in the second half.
Yeah.
And you're kind of going... And that is really where you need a referee who is absolutely all over with common sense.
Just let's talk in bigger terms about what a win for Tyrone coming through that match actually means. We were writing Tyrone off 2 weeks ago when they didn't have McShane, kind of saying, look, and they're not going to have Matty Donnelly for most of the league, and who knows what he's going to come back like after the severity of the injury. But a win like that where they grind it out and they get McShane back and the car horns are hooting from the from the sidelines.
Well, they basically won without McShane and Donnelly yesterday. McShane kicked 1 point from a dead ball, but he didn't really do much. Like, that's a huge win without their two best players, essentially, yeah. I would have thought.
No, it was a big win. McCurry, I thought, was absolutely... Like, he just has one of those days. Like, he should have scored at least another two or three. Like, actually, he kicked one or two that were easier than the ones he kicked around that. But I thought he led the round really well. Like, he's a guy, I'd say, who's been frustrated over the last number of years because he's been in, out, taken on, taken off. And yesterday, he really stood up and said, no, actually, I'm one of the men here. And it was actually funny, when McShane came on, he had a chance to give him a ball, and he just went, no, I'm actually going to, this is going to be me, and he slipped it over. He's a guy who I think has all the ability. Like, he's left and right foot. He caused Meade problems, I know, in the first game. I thought McShane is a big boy. Like, I mean, he's well able to bully and do whatever he needs to do in there as well. He's a great target man. Like, no, I don't think writing them off is the way forward. I think yesterday
they're
will
back.
Be a big fill-up for them. Yeah. Yeah. Now, look, that fixture yesterday, I was thinking to myself, you're going to bed as a Kerry player on Saturday night and you're going, you're checking the weather app and you're just saying to yourself, oh, this is not where I'd rather be on a Sunday. And you're heading up and you know it's going to be dogged and you know it's going to be all the way and everything you can. And it's just one of those things there. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. You put a massive effort in, and it's just a hard game. It's a really, really tough game for you. And the way it went, obviously, with the first half and stuff, I thought Kerry should have been out in front. I thought O'Shea had a poor game. Mm. He kicked three or four really bad shots where they just dropped into the keeper's hands and went wide. And they needed to build up more of a lead. He looked a little bit off to me, actually. But it's funny. It was a good win for Tyrone.
A quick word about Galway here. So they go to Letterkenny and they win by a single point against the Donegal team, who've been playing quite well and who've been scoring goals and continue to score goals yesterday. 2-8 to 2-7 was the full time score. Again, this is one of those wins that, like, a Galway team needs to dog out, and they do, and suddenly we start thinking about them a bit differently.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, they were well behind. I think it was, you know, maybe 2-6 to 4, something like that. I'm not sure the exact score, but they were well behind at one stage, around 40 something minutes gone, and I kind of said to myself, wow, there's no way they're coming back from this, because Donegal looked well in control. Donegal caught them with a classic goal where they were going across lateral on the pitch, and if you watch it was brilliant. They give it back to McHugh. The Galway lads, instead of actually just holding their line, started chasing them out. McHugh just goes around one of them. Two fellas step up and he just pops the ball into the space and just straight down through the middle. Galway have issues there at six. The same, though, as Donegal have issues at six, because once Galway decided, actually, we're going to just come in at angles and run directly at them, they had runners and they got in behind and they sighted through the middle. Shane Walsh was absolutely unbelievable again. Like, Eoin Gallagher was on him, who is lightning quick and who is a fantastic player, and he had his fill of it with him. Because at one stage he had to call in two or three guys to come in and help him. He just led the line so brilliantly yesterday. Like, he was in absolutely everything he did was top notch. And he
what sort of man do you put on him?
Well, you put on him. You put on him. I think you need to match his pace. Obviously, you need to match his ability to step. And I don't think you put a dog on him, you know, because he's too big. He's physical enough with you. You know, he's well able to hold guys off and do what he needs to do. So I think you need to put a player on him. What Gallagher probably didn't do enough of was go the other way. You know, he probably didn't take him
to tire him out.
Yeah, he probably didn't take him for a run enough. But I'd say he was saying to himself, I might just take a break. Yeah. Because, you know, Walsh wasn't just getting it and shifting it off. He was getting it. He was going on runs. He was, you know, holding on to the ball. So he was tiring him out too. But he was excellent. Galway, they came back really well. Like, I mean, Donegal had ample opportunities to level it. Two frees right at the death. I mean, it looked like the referee just wanted a draw.
Yeah.
But you know, they came out. And it's a big win for Pádraig Joyce. He'd be delighted with that.
It is a big win. Shane Walsh is only 26. This is his absolute peak now for the next 3 years, so we can look forward to this. It's great.
Yeah.
The other one I wanted to talk about was I saw James Horan saying that Mayo pinched 2 points against Meath. They beat Meath by a point, 19-25. Andy McAtee very upset with the timing afterwards. Is he right to be?
Yeah, like, I mean, when you kind of look across the... Well, first of all, he'd probably have other things to be upset about, right? Like, I mean, the shot selection by some of the Mead lads taking Hail Mary shots, shots outside their range, fellas who should be sticking the ball over the bar, moving the ball in a bit, getting it to an area where they know they're going to have a much higher percentage rate of execution, very poor. They were absolutely headless until Brian Menton and Donal Keoghan took a hold of the situation with James McAtee, and they got a few goals. Really well worked goal. But until that point, they were, you know, I think it was 46, 47 minutes, they only had a point on the board. So they had nearly 10, 15 minutes of the second half without scoring with the breeze. And they looked like their confidence was starting to really, really... Like, Brian McMahon won a mark, and then he went to kick the free, and he kicked it 15, 20 metres wide, high on the right. And you could just see the players kind of going, oh. And when you're in that, two losses, you know what's to come. So, to be fair, a couple of their leaders stood up, and they got the goals. 74 minutes was on the clock, and it was 74-04. The ball was kicked out to a point down, and he blew the whistle. Now, you'd go, there was definitely a situation prior to that where one of the Mayo lads went down. There was a tackle, he was holding his head. And when there's a head, you're meant to stop the play. The referee actually didn't. He said, get up. But there was a bit of, so there was about 90 seconds there where he was on the ground. And I was saying, well, that's at least 2 minutes then of extra time.
Yeah.
And when you look across the other games, like, as I said, the Donegal one went on for an extra, because fellas do that now in extra time. You know, I'll take the opportunity to go down. And there was one where actually the keeper came out, Henley, and it was like he kind of didn't know where the ball was. You know, he was kind of like, the ball was on the tee, you know, and he was walking around for it. And it was like, come on, you know, and then he walked, oh, here it is, you know, I'll kick it out now. You know, so there's a good 20 seconds, 30 seconds. Now, listen, that's hard for a referee.
They're all auditioning for Fair
City. But I just don't know how the referee just doesn't click off his watch. Well, maybe they do, you know, and maybe that's why everyone's going mad. Like, I thought the Dublin one was
perfect.
Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I agreed, yeah. Yeah,
it was perfect.
So. Yeah.
He deserved the 2 minutes extra. So I think he's aggrieved, but I think when they look at it, Mayo were pretty poor now.
Well, I was going to say, if Meath gets something from that game, you're thinking to yourself, right, Mayo are right there in the mire. They've got 3 points now, which is a decent start to any league. Yeah, but are they still there? Are they still candidates for relegation, Mayo?
I'm not sure of their running, but they were bad. Mm. They were bad. They were, you know, Kevin McLaughlin had to come on and save the day. Like, he gets 1-2, shows a bit of energy. They're very light up front. They're very light up front now, you know. So and look, of course, they've got some new guys in there, and they've obviously got fellas to come back. Aidan O'Shea did as usual. Meade were asleep for a while because Henley, I don't know how many kickouts he kicked out to his right. But for I don't know how many in a row, he just punted out to his right. And then Meade eventually took that option out for him because they put two guys out here. And eventually then he had to start going down the middle and to his left. And Meade started winning kickouts. But it's a very simple ploy because he doesn't have the length when he has to go across his body. And if you make it down the middle, you make it a bit more of a battle. But they were like, they had Keegan and the, but I just thought they were, yeah, they'll struggle if they don't get fellas back soon. They'll struggle.
All right, one last comment. Pelstar Street GAA says, why is it the umpire's fault? Do players and managers have any responsibilities?
Listen, if I'm you know, if I see David Clifford on a yellow and I'm thinking, okay, just go in and rough him up or whatever, and like, I mean, if that's the style, it's going to happen.
We should accept that it's going to happen, and empower everybody to make right decisions. So
correct. Like, I mean, the guys, the officials are in there to officiate the game, you know, and you come in, you have to have some common sense at certain times. And you've seen it before where fellas have gone in, they've gone, oh, actually, he's on the yellow.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll just have a chat to him rather than giving him the second one.
Anthony, good stuff. Thanks a million.
No bother, lads.
On Monday, the 17th of February, some of the best football pundits in the country are going to be on hand to talk through the upcoming Champions League second round fixtures. Brian Kerr, Damien Delaney, Keith Andrews and European Cup winning legend Graeme Souness will all be in attendance at the Alex Hotel in Dublin. It's all with thanks to Virgin Media Sport, which has over 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games live this season, with these games being available to all Virgin Media TV customers. Head over to offtheball.com/events. to register for tickets. Tom Malone is with us next with the sports news. First, here's Ian Henderson talking about the challenge Ireland have coming up next against England.
Yeah, look, I just said it there now. The guys who came off the bench really added to that, added to the tempo, and it's great to see granted, maybe not the Wales last try, but Ireland really keeping keeping the foot in the throat, if you like to use that expression, and getting that try in 76 minutes. I think that's a good indication of where we want to go and what we want to build upon.
There's a triple crown on the go in Twickenham, which you've done before. Is that something you use as motivation?
Obviously, the triple crown is something that would be great to win. It'll go hopefully nicely along with the following two games after that, but a lot of the players will be thinking about is the last game that we had in Twickenham and how that definitely didn't go the way we wanted it to go. We'll definitely be looking back at that and looking to see how we can make improvements and what we can do. Obviously, we'll be watching this game pretty closely. It's happening at the minute. Actually, don't know what the score is. It was a 3-0. 3-0 last time I saw. So, like, England will definitely be up for it. They'll be looking to go after us, come out all guns blazing. So we've got a week off now, a week to regenerate and recuperate, try and fix what we think needs fixed, and then going into that England week, we can really ramp up.
Very welcome back. Tom Malone is, of course, beside us here. That was Ian Henderson. We were just listening to full interviews from the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, available on youtube.com/off the ball. We can hear you now.
Yeah, you can hear me now. That's good. That's good.
Tom, what's going on?
The bottom line. Well, Owen, after yesterday's result, sports stars arriving in Dublin Airport can breathe a sigh of relief because, unfortunately, outgoing Minister for Sport Shane Ross has lost his Dáil Éireann seat, having been eliminated in Dublin Rathdown following the fifth count. Ross received just 8% of first preference votes and was eliminated from proceedings on the fifth count. The Steppside representative, though, was magnanimous in defeat last night.
I don't think tonight is a time for regret. I think it's time to congratulate those who were successful. There's obviously been a huge appetite for change, and those who've represented that very articulately have been successful, and I think it's appropriate for me to say well done to them and congratulations, and I hope they make up a really successful government and they bring about the changes which are necessary. I'd be fairly sanguine about it. I think it's, you know, when you get a democratic vote of this sort, it's the wish of the people. And if I made mistakes and could have done things differently, that's all right. But I did what I thought was right all the time. And I'm perfectly happy to give others an opportunity to do what's right.
Elsewhere, Ruth Coppinger, who is very prominent in the Oireachtas Committee looking into John Delaney in the FAI, she also lost her seat, while former Mayo GAA half-forward Alan Dillon was elected for Fine Gael. Dillon held the seat of Fine Gael, formerly held by Enda Kenny in Castlebar.
So. He was like quite far down when I was
He did incredibly well. I think he only had about 4,500 or 4,800 first preference votes.
But he got the transfers.
Yeah, so he got the transfers. And
did he get a Michael Ring-esque carry on the shoulders?
Oh, I'd say so.
Wandering has that down after years and years of service. If he hasn't perfected by now, there will be something wrong.
I like the younger guys who are obviously not used to it and just feel really, really awkward being lifted in the air. And it's, look, I'm just glad that my 12 hours on the couch yesterday wasn't wasted around to carry a politics story at the top. Anyway, the Irish women's rugby team, meanwhile, sit top of the Six Nations table this morning. Adam Greig's side recorded back-to-back wins in the competition with a bonus point 31-12 win over Wales at horrific conditions in Energy Park yesterday. It's the first time since February 2018 that Ireland have registered back-to-back Six Nations win. And Judy Bobbitt said it was an important victory, particularly after losing to the Welsh in Dublin last year.
I know it was hard to possibly, you know, work on or to improve your set pieces out there with the conditions. How did you find playing out there in that, especially in the second half? It got really, really gusty and really wet.
Yeah, you know, we kind of switched the game plan to forwards carrying a lot. It was too wet, and you know, the hailstones coming down, any back ball probably would have been knocked on regardless of how the quality of player. So we kind of just, as a pack, we just kind of tried to do as much phase plays as we can, huddle in tight and just get it through the hands and quick reloads, just keep the clock going.
Is that something that's, you know, is that something that happens out on the pitch? Are you encouraged as players to think on your feet and, you know, address the conditions as they come at you?
Yeah, you know, it's a bit of game management, and then, you know, fortunately with a lot of senior players, they're used to this, and they can call the shots, and we just have to be ready to whatever call comes in, and we have to switch on.
How are you finding it now? Because you are new to this 15 setup, and it's your first Six Nations tournament. How do you feel you're, I suppose, getting to this level of rugby?
Yeah, it can be a bit of a roller coaster, but you know, the girls around you, they, you know, it's nearly like a family out there, and they look after you from management straight down to, you know, extended panel. But personally, you know, I'm enjoying it, and hopefully with two from two at the moment, we can build on it and go further.
Following that game yesterday as well, the RFU were forced to issue an apology to the Welsh team after the players had no hot water in their showers as well. A statement which was released yesterday evening said there was an issue with the water heater in the change room and every effort was made to resolve the problem. And they added that they thanked the Welsh team for their understanding in that scenario. But not, just looks...
it's ridiculous.
It's absolutely, especially in the day like that. I mean, the weather.
It doesn't happen to the under 20s.
It doesn't happen to anyone. It's the kind of thing that happens when you have a really bad grudge match with your local team and you deliberately turn off the showers to
in junior C level.
Yeah. When, you know, when the cornerback is there wearing like jeans and shoes. France, meanwhile, followed up their win over victory in the men's competition with a bonus point, 35-22 win against Italy in Paris. Tries from Thomas, Olivon, Aldred, Antimac and Serran helped the French to a victory to put them top on points difference. They have gone above Ireland now at the top of the table. Meanwhile, Dublin sit top of Division 1 of the Allianz National Football League after the weekend's action. Yesterday, Tyrone beat Kerry by 14 points to 13, while Galway also beat Donegal by a single point in Letterkenny. That finished 2-8 to 2-7. Desi Farrell's side are top on goal difference. Elsewhere yesterday, a late Kevin McLaughlin goal, the Port Talchin saw Meath beaten by Mayo 1-9 to 2-5. While in Division 2, Roscommon enjoyed a 1-8 to 4 points win over Clare at Dr. Hyde Park, their first of the campaign, while Westmeath saw Fermanagh by 10 points to 8 in Cusick Park. In football yesterday, newly promoted Sheffield United are just 2 points off the Champions League spots in the Premier League. The Blades sit fifth, putting immense pressure on Chelsea after coming from behind to beat Bournemouth by 2-1 at Bramall Lane. Sheffield United manager Chris Wilder insists the team will not be distracted, though, by talk of securing European football.
That was obviously a chant at the end of the game, staying up, which I heard, which just on to the next game. You know, this is a hungry group of players and we haven't got comfy shoes on. We want a bit more.
And yesterday's other game, of course, between Manchester City and West Ham at the Etihad was called off due to public safety concerns over the weather conditions. And finally, Rory McIlroy, despite not playing a shot in anger over the course of the weekend, is now top of the world golf rankings for the first time since 2015. Four-time major winning Ulsterman leapfrogs Brooks Koepka after the weekend's action rather at Pebble Beach.
One of life's goals is to at some point be rich enough to play in that AT&T Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
It looks amazing.
Yeah, it's such a...
the weather's awesome. Spectacular. Like, it's the greatest collection of sports celebrities you're ever going to see.
Yeah.
You can just rock up if you've got enough money?
Pretty much.
Yeah, you kind of get invited. I'm sure your invitation costs you quite a few quid.
Meet the right people in the right places, Owen. Mm-hmm.
You make the right donations.
Everything's got its price. You know that.
It starts doing the Graphic Golf Weekly. You might get there.
Yeah, well, that's it. Exactly. Right, Tom. Thanks very much for that. Cheers. Time for us to talk about some of the best partnerships in sport.
OTB
AM. Brought to you by Pandora. Celebrate love with a special gift.
Well, this week here on OTB AM, Valentine's Week, of course, we're going to be going through the best sporting partnerships, and it's all with thanks to Pandora. Owen, we're looking at football this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Who have you got for us?
Well, I couldn't really look much further than the love that's shared between Thierry Henry and Dennis Bergkamp. When this idea came out there, like, we're going to do partnerships for the week, this is the first one I wanted to do. So football, starting the week off, it just couldn't be better, really, for Bergkamp, Henry. I kind of like the whole idea of the sort of master apprentice, and then the apprentice becomes the master, and the master is still a really talented old guy.
Okay, yeah, go on.
That's basically how the Henry, and like, I mean, it could have become a love triangle, a very awkward love triangle at times. I mean, Canu perhaps threatened to turn this from not just a two-person partnership but into a three-person partnership. He was kind of shunted. Same with Sylvain Wiltord, kind of moved out to the flank.
They were just affairs. This is a...
They were affairs.
This is a long-standing marriage.
This was never going to be a love triangle. This is always going to be... a tête-à-tête of pure footballing...
emotion. Passion.
Passion.
Or is it cold? Is it coldness? Was there a tough love element to this partnership?
I would say there were coldness when they're side by side and warm looking each other head on. That is how I would say a mutual appreciation.
Shoulder to shoulder, they could kill anybody.
Exactly, but they knew that together they would form... an incredible arsenal of just terror for any opposition that they came up against. And even just watching, we were watching the Tunnelgate match last week, and there were even moments when, if you flipped the roles a small bit, when Henri would come deeper and Bergkamp would push further forward, that you had moments of magic as well, because Henri's passing range is something that was extraordinary, and now Bergkamp didn't have the pace to ever lead the line, especially at that stage in his career. But I think he would certainly thank Henri for the renaissance he had in his career, and I think Henri would thank Bergkamp for bringing him to the heights that he got to in terms of just pure goal scoring and winning Golden Boots.
Bear in mind, Thierry Henry was a bust when he arrived.
Exactly. Well, he was a winger.
He was a big risk, who had been a complete bust in Italy, having had a, you know, superstar teenager, goes to Italy, flops, and doesn't score for his first 15 games, is it?
It's a long time. Until Manchester United, isn't it?
First 10 games, anyway. He doesn't score, and that relationship with Bergkamp is obviously very important.
Of course it is. And, like, as I say, the reason why Kanu was a problem in this is because Kanu was seen as a striker that was better than Thierry Henry at the time, or certainly a more effective man to lead the line, because Henry was obviously seen as a winger. And then, lo and behold, something clicked, and I would put a hell of a lot of it down to Dennis Bergkamp.
I want to play you this. It's Kevin Kilvan talking to Joe about his first-hand experience of going toe-to-toe with Dennis Bergkamp.
The Arsenal invincible side always talked about as a big, massive team. Players would say, you'd look over at them in the tunnel and think, oh crap.
Perez, Bergkamp, you know, I'm going back maybe prior to that. Yeah, Sol Campbell, that side.
Henry's big.
Sean. Huge, huge, huge lads. I mean, ridiculously, that's maybe that 10-year spell leading to that invincible side, but they were huge. As I said, Perez, Vieira, all these lads. I mean, they were
surprised you named Perez there twice as the first name that came to your mind.
Well, Perez, because Perez was so good. He was dirty as well. That's why Perez, yeah, and so was Bergkamp. Yeah, they were technically brilliant, but they could handle themselves.
Bergkamp obviously has a reputation for sharp elbows.
Perez used to leave you a little bit on you here and there, yeah. Always just go, just wait for lads to go in and make that initial challenge, and then just hang his foot in there and just leave a bit on you. Yeah. But he was that strong physically. That was the thing with Perez. You got anywhere near, oh yeah, yeah, really strong. You know, Bergkamp was 6'2", 6'3". Henri, all these lads, they were all well over 6 feet tall. Vieira, 6'4".
Bergkamp, 6'2".
Oh yeah, big lad, big man, yeah. That was the eye-catching thing with Bergkamp when I first went up against him, the size on his chest. Massive chest, massive shoulders. Such, he was a specimen. Incredible, wow. Incredible how strong and how imposing he looked when you saw him, Bergkamp. I, you know, 6'1" myself, and I wouldn't have necessarily thought, but Bergkamp was definitely in that.
Surprises me. Unless they all just, you know, the likes of Bergkamp and Perez look slightly smaller because they were constantly surrounded by an Henri and a Vieira and a Campbell.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never would have had Bergkamp down as especially big. Like, you're talking about his chest.
Yeah.
Put him down as fairly scrawny.
Yeah, yeah, honestly. Yeah.
Wow.
And would leave a bit on you, as I said before.
I mean, clearly, Bergkamp was filthy.
Yeah.
Elbows.
Yeah. That was his one, the elbow. Just that little timing of the jump. Maybe just slightly mistime his jump accidentally on purpose, and then bang, have some of that. That was Bergkamp's. Yeah. Brilliant, though.
Dennis Bergkamp actually only 6 feet, Kev, if you're watching this morning. He just obviously seemed a bit bigger when you were standing beside him.
Kevin Kilvan also only 6 feet, according to Wikipedia.
Bergkamp, nearly touching 6'2". Sorry, Thierry Henry touching 6'2". But Bergkamp just 6 feet. It's funny, maybe they just had taller studs or something. They were wearing the metal studs at the start when you could get away with that.
That Arsenal team were all elbows, I'd say, all grit. Like, nobody here is like proclaiming this to be Mr. Nice Guy couple, or the loving partnership of treating your opponents with a whole heap of respect. They were winners, cold-blooded, and it's beautiful, really, the relationship that they've had.
That's it. Okay, so that's your partnership, right?
Who have you gone for?
Taking you all the way back to the summer of 1993. A long, hot summer. Manchester United have just won the league. And there's only one name in world football that everybody wants to sign. There are upstarts from Blackburn who have already signed Alan Shearer from underneath the nose of Alex Ferguson, although Ferguson ends up getting Cantona. So, you know, as things go, swings and roundabouts. But Shearer is the most dominant young talent in European football. The next most rising talent in European football is Roy Keane. He's just been relegated with Nottingham Forest, and he's available. And so Roy Keane, on a Friday afternoon, goes and meets Kenny Dalglish, boyhood idol, Kenny Dalglish, who's like, you know, trusting go-ahead. And they bicker. They bicker as two alpha males will do about money. Keane wants exactly the same amount of money as Alan Shearer. Dalglish is like, no, not giving it to you. Eventually they come to a deal, right? 500 grand was what Shearer was on. 400 grand is what? A year. 400 grand a year is what they end up giving Roy Keane. They shake hands on the deal on the Friday evening. Keane goes home, goes on the session Cork, wakes up on a Sunday morning, his brother's standing over him with the phone going, it's Alex Ferguson. Huh? Come and meet me. Have you signed anything? Come and meet me. They go to Ferguson's mansion. They play a bit of snooker. Roy Keane falls in love. The deal with Blackburn Rovers never gets signed. Mm. It would have been signed on the Friday evening if the administrative staff were still in Ewood Park. But they'd gone home. It's a Friday afternoon in summer. Nothing's happening.
Can't play them.
What's going to happen? They might have been in the pub. Who knows? There's no contracts available. So instead, Roy Keane and Alex Ferguson begin the greatest relationship in the history of English football. It is the biggest and most important and single most relationship at the heart of Manchester United during the period where Alex Ferguson becomes Alex Ferguson. Up to this point, he's been a good manager. He's won one league title, but there's no sense of his team being the dominant force. Bear in mind, if you put Keane and Shearer in the same team, they're roughly the same age. They're going to have a decade of absolute dominance because they're the best players. They are both the best players in their respective positions. Do we have the bit from Ferguson's book? The picture from Ferguson's book? We can stick that up. It was the most emphatic display of selflessness I've ever seen in a football field. Pounding over every blade of grass, competing if he would rather die of exhaustion than lose. He inspired all around him. I felt such an honour to be associated with such a player. This is Ferguson talking about Keane in 99 in the semi-final of the Champions League after he's picked up a second book and is going to miss the game. Scholes is also on a second booking heading into the match, so he picks Nicky Butt to start the game. He protects Scholes. First name on the team sheet in every big game from 93 when he signs to 2001 when Keane's hip starts to get at him properly, and even to 2002 and before Kiros arrives. This is the single most important relationship at the heart of Manchester United when they win the league title 7 out of 8 years or 6 out of 8 years, whatever it is that period. The fact that they fall out subsequently in so vicious, so violent a fashion that they despise each other so publicly
forever
means to me that the love that they felt was true.
That's deep right there. Or maybe it was actually just the success and the joy that they got from the success was really strong, and actually it was only to do with their love for one another. Of course there was an appreciation there.
They didn't enjoy the success. It doesn't seem like so you see them happy and hey, but actually that didn't give them happiness, did it? The money and the titles and the fame did not make either of those men happy. I don't know what's ever, if I don't know if they're going to die unhappy, if at the end of their lives they look back and go, Jesus, I affected the entire world. Every room I walked into, everybody was aware of the fact that I was walking into that room. But I never quite found contentment.
I'm sure they got brief moments of contentment as this relationship was flourishing. I'm sure the dominance is something that gave these men huge satisfaction. Being better than everybody.
They've both written multiple books. And the first books they write are these love songs to each other about how, you know, I found my soulmate here. Because Ferguson talks about, you know, I never needed to go in and drive the dressing room on because Roy Keane just did that for me. When you have that in a changing room, that just sorts everything out. The second book is like, Keane got too big for his boots. He was no longer as good as he used to be. We spotted this coming miles out. We changed his game. We turned him from a up and down the box to sitting to protect him. Like, to protect him. And Keane is like, Ferguson, too many of his family involved, too distracted by the horse. But actually, in the first book, it's like, wow, what a manager this is. If only the Ireland team could have been managed by him, we would have won a World Cup.
Does that damage the whole legacy of the relationship, though?
Oh, the relationship. Relationships aren't just good and bad. This is Shakespearean level.
I mean, let's just use the books for an example then. So it starts off as a kind of a great love note. Kind of like a Diana Ross album or something from Alex Ferguson. And then after the breakup, it just becomes a Taylor Swift album. It's kind of cheap and this is actually a terrible end to your relationship, and it's all being aired in public. And actually, I don't really have a whole pile of respect for how this has been dealt with. Does that not impact how you view it on this week of all weeks, the love that's shared between them?
I think as partnerships go, that was the most intense. The bigger the love, the bigger the fallout. Let's have a quick look at Roy Keane explaining how the relationship collapsed at our roadshow last September.
I tell you what, I was at the club when Brian Robson left. I was at the club when Steve Bruce left. Two brilliant servants for Man United. And I didn't like the way they were treated at the end. So people talk about Ferguson's man management. Don't be kidded on by all of it either. Yeah. Don't be kidded on by all that. And Ferguson came out afterwards going, well, I always done what was best for United, Manchester United. Nonsense. His son played for the club, won a league medal, Darren. Very lucky. His brother was chief scout for Man United for a long time. Hey, listen, I'm surprised his wife wasn't involved on the staff somewhere. Darren, his son, was at Preston one time. Darren loses his job. A couple of young players on loan for Man United. Guess what happens the next day? They're pulled out of Preston. Is that what's doing the best for Man United? Do me a favour.
When did you last speak to Ferguson?
Not since then, obviously.
Not one conversation?
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no. No interest in speaking to the man.
Nothing even over the past year. The ill health made you think, maybe I'll just give him a call. Maybe life's too short.
No. When he apologises to me. And David Gill. No problem.
Now, come on, tell me that you've ever been in a relationship that, like, drives you to that fury.
Do you think that Roy Keane is, like, going onto WhatsApp and checking to see if Ferguson is typing?
The blue tick?
No, just to see, will it actually turn from last seen on, you know, 2nd of March 2002 to actually the green typing, and that he might actually be getting a message from Alex Ferguson to say, listen, Roy, I'm sorry.
All this week we're talking about the best partnerships in sport. If you've got any suggestions for us, you can use the hashtag OTBM or you can tweet us at OffTheBallAM. It's all in association with Pandora. Show her that you know her and find the perfect gift this Valentine's Day with Pandora. So we've got some of the stuff here that you can see. It depends on what you like, but there are bracelets and there are rings and there are necklaces. So check out Pandora for, I mean, it's early in the week, yeah. It's only Monday. You've got plenty of time. You don't really have plenty of time if you want to get stuff together. Valentine's Day big in your house, Owen?
Huge thing, huge deal. Absolutely goes way back, doesn't it?
Right. Owen braved the elements on Saturday night after Ireland beat Wales so that we could bring you this, the fan reaction.
It's full time here in Dublin and Ireland have beaten Wales. It's 2 from 2 for Andy Farrell as Ireland head coach. They've beaten Wales in the Six Nations in the Aviva Stadium this afternoon. Here is what the Ireland fans have had to say.
Today was the day that a nation fell in love with this rugby team again.
I thought Ireland were fantastic, brilliant, aggressiveness to the ball. Yeah, I thought Ireland were absolutely fantastic today. Aggressive to the ball.
Oh, unbelievable, yeah. It's a good crack, wasn't it?
It was a great performance, in fairness. Very good performance from front to back. I think that we played very well.
Just to be clear.
You're Welsh?
No, I'm Dutch.
You're Dutch?
Yes.
Hello.
Do you know what? Dublin's been incredible.
It's no one cares.
Do you know what? I came here as an Englishman with a bunch of Welsh lads to watch the rugby, and it's been a poor performance for them, to be honest. It's quite great to get to throw it back in their face a bit, but Dublin's been great. we've had a lot of Guinness. Been to the Guinness factory, haven't we, mate?
Well, I thought that Ireland was superb. Wales underperformed massively. And
England were imperious.
Oh, Tracy.
I drank a lot of Guinness, it was great.
Where are you from?
I'm from Sarnia, Ontario, Canada.
Is this your first time in Ireland?
No, that's probably my fifth.
And do you go to the rugby all the time?
I do watch it a lot.
I'll give you some depth. How's that?
I have to say I was quite surprised that Ireland played so well and that we dominated the Welsh like we did.
It was amazing. They played amazingly.
Who's the best player?
Shit, I don't know.
Are you related?
My father-in-law.
I love the crowd, actually. The synchronized sort of singing.
I'm only holding the microphone now.
Nom, nom, nom.
What made you pick us out?
Yeah, loved it.
So good atmosphere, right?
Loved it. I'll be back for another one, for sure. For sure.
No, he won't.
Two games to go.
He's not coming.
Yeah. And listen, all together, support Shebridge Construction Limited and work away. Thank you. Shebridge is a great construction company down in County Kildare. And we aim to prove, and if you want an extension done or anything else, give me a shout.
And are you busy now that the boom is back?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Great performance. Great performance. Throughout, our pack was strong. Our back row was superb. Colin Murray was fantastic.
The game, such, how will I put it? Damn squid last week, loved it this week. I think they're settling down, and I think Andy Farrell's doing a good job.
Faf de Klerk is a legend.
Oh, well, without a doubt, Mr.
CJ Sander.
100%. Sorry, just didn't want to make a mistake there.
The plan for tonight is trying to get a taxi and get home. Back to South Armagh. We're going back to South Armagh. We're going to celebrate in South Armagh in Forkill and Drumontree and in Mullaghan probably as well. There will be magic. There will be magic crack. Magic crack. Magic crack. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My nephew flew in from Switzerland and appeared today on the telly, so he's getting massive amounts of texts. So we're all going to have a family dinner. Amen. Well, you know what? He kind of just looks really handsome. He plays for the Swiss national team. So he's a bit of a rugby player, Monsieur Liam Gavina from Switzerland. Okay, allez la France. Allez, allez Ireland.
So if you wouldn't mind just giving me your thoughts on today's game.
The Ireland match, yeah.
Yeah.
Really good game. Fantastic. I did not expect us to beat Wales. I went into this game thinking that we might have a chance.
The spread of the ball, it reminded me of rugby in the old days.
We opened up a lot more and wow, it kind of proved dividends. It gave us dividends. I don't know if I'm using that word right, but it did.
Plan for tonight is to... I won't tell you. It's private.
Well, why? What could possibly be so private about it?
My future wife is coming down to visit me. In fact, she's waiting for me, so now I have to go.
Best of luck with the wedding.
Thank you.
And the weather's not getting you down, no?
No. The weather, not one bit. We are Irish, we are proud, and we are absolutely weathered to that weather. We know exactly how to cope with that. And you know what? Today was the day where we could play our best game.
Hi. Welcome to Paris. The Paris done us proud. Go on, Ireland!
Come here. What do we think of the rugby?
Man, I fucking love the rugby. The Ireland, that's the squad. Yeah, I know I'm at the wrong game. First time in Ireland. First time watching rugby. I think Ireland's the team, right? They look the best team in the world.
Triple crane. Triple crane.
100%, right? Wales wins 42-0. You guys smack them for like 20?
Triple crane. Triple crane.
Triple crown. Triple crown. Ireland. Jordan, right?
Lamore.
Jordan Lamore.
Yeah.
Jordan Lamore. That's my guy.
CJ's a six. Everybody knows a six. Fuck's sakes, they know our Musgrave Park.
Okay, and what I would like to say is I was there with the family and they performed today and thank you, Ireland. You're great. Thank you for a great day. That was unexpected.
God, you're such a nice person.
It was an unexpected victory and well done you. We're right behind you. Right behind you all the way. First. All the way. Come on, Ireland.
I think we won it in the second half with our forwards.
Are we going to win the championship?
I don't know.
France will win the championship. Ireland come second. Good night.
Up May of the All Ireland.
OTB AM.
Brought to you by Pandora. Show her that you know her.
20 minutes past nine. Phil Egan is here. Phil, good morning to you.
Good morning, lads.
An unusual weekend of football, but interesting nonetheless.
Yeah. Found myself watching a lot more continental football, and people say, why don't you watch it more? But there's just so much on most weekends. I think anyone that's been glued in to watch the election coverage yesterday, that's what sport is like every weekend. There's that much going on that you have no time to do anything.
You're speaking to the wrong audience here. You're speaking to a sports
No, it's brilliant.
Audience.
It's brilliant. But what I'm saying is because
the
there's so many games on, you have to pick and choose which games, and a lot of the time you'll put Premier League ahead of other ones. So yesterday gave me a chance to watch other games like Bundesliga, the Milan derby, got to see a little bit of Barcelona as well. So
Milan derby is the place to start.
Yeah, and we always associate Italian football, like in the 90s it was always low scoring, and one thing we've got in Serie A now is a serious title race. You've got three teams in it as well. Lazio haven't really been talked about that much, but they're only a point off. They haven't lost a league game since September. They play Inter Milan next weekend in Rome. And they're the in-form team. Inter Milan were 2-0 down to AC Milan after Juventus losing on Saturday against Verona. Fabio Barini scores for Verona. Still has the same celebration. Doesn't obviously get to use it that often.
I was going to say, I don't know what it is.
It's kind of like Usain Bolt's thing, isn't
it? A little bit, but he kind of bites his hand as well. Yeah. So we wouldn't have got to see it that many times. I certainly didn't get to see him do it that much in a Liverpool jersey. But that happens, obviously, on Saturday, and you think, right, this is your chance, Inter Milan. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic has different ideas, and AC Milan are 2-0 up at halftime. The thing about Zlatan, he's 38, but there was the ball that was put in for the first goal where he sets up Rebic, he towers over Diego Godin. Like, Godin is obviously getting on a bit, but he's still very useful in the air. But he's no chance against Zlatan. Obviously, Zlatan then scores just before halftime. So you're kind of thinking, right, Conte, I don't know what you're going to say at halftime, but you got to pull this around. And crazy second half.
Four goals.
Inter Milan scored four goals. Alexis Sanchez actually set up the equaliser, but it was 2-2 within 10 minutes of the second half, and you thought, right, this is it, game on. And then the Vrij scores from a corner, 3-2. Zlatan hits the post, would have made it 3-3. And Inter Milan get the fourth goal. Romelu Lukaku scores again. It's very strange watching Inter Milan team. It's like a Premier League selection.
Yeah, it's great.
Victor Moses came on.
Sanchez set one up. Christian Eriksen rattles the postage stamp section of the woodwork. Like, I know the XFL was back in American football at the weekend. If there was a soccer version of the XFL, Zlatan would 100% be the number one pick in the draft. Like, just those elbows flailing, his ability to climb, legally or illegally, it seems that there's maybe a little bit more of freedom from Serie A refs allowing to, you know, climb over people like Diego Godin and set up a goal like he did. Like, he's 38 years old, but he's still got that aggression. And he can still head the ball. Like, it would have been a headed assist and two-headed goals had he not whacked that one off the crossbar at the end.
But you remember when Mourinho got the Spurs job, I joked saying that Mourinho is going to sign Zlatan. You can see why...
He would have done it.
Because, all you know, if you put a cross into the box and Zlatan's in there, there's a good chance he's going to score.
Is he able, over the course of 90 minutes, though, like, is it the wrong thing to do for your team to have somebody who is not able to last 90 minutes anymore? Like, he's a plan B for the last 20 minutes when you're chasing a game, and he's never going to settle for that, is he?
No, I can't imagine how that conversation goes where you're just saying, Zlatan, stay warm, we might need you.
Oh, we'll definitely use you no matter what the score is, and then you just have a deal that, like, he comes off after 70 minutes.
But his hold-up play was excellent as well.
Was that? Okay,
I don't think I'm doing him justice here, because his hold-up play, he doesn't give the ball away. Okay, he doesn't have... He's not as pacey as he once was. He was never explosive anyway, but he's still a handful. Milan were actually in really good form going into this game since they've... appointed Stefano Pioli. He's kind of turned things around. And, you know, at halftime I was thinking, the way Milan are going here...
Actually, they haven't played the full game, basically.
If they win this game,
there's
a good chance the run they're on, they could actually maybe make a late run for top four. But now they find themselves 10 points off fourth place. Atalanta are in fourth place at the moment. So it looks like it's going to be a stretch. But it was looking like 7 points, which is something that they could have clawed back. But
if you were a Manchester United fan watching that last night, Phil, what would be your main emotion?
Get Alexis Sanchez back. Was he that good?
No, he wasn't that good.
No, just in terms of, like, what has actually occurred there, that Lukaku was crap. Not that crap. Sanchez was certainly crap. Ashley Young perhaps allowed to leave. When you compare Lukaku, Sanchez, and Ibrahimovic, did Ibrahimovic probably the best Manchester United career of the post United players on show outside of Ashley Young last night?
Yeah, I suppose, because they won a couple of trophies that season. Obviously, they won the League Cup and he scored the winning goal. And they won the Europa League. I know he didn't play in the final, but he was pivotal in their run there. So you could argue that he was the best of them. You know, he was there for a season, effectively, because he obviously got the injury. But the likes of, say, Ashley Young, I think United fans were happy enough to see him go. And nothing against him, but, it, you know, just a sign that Brandon Williams is coming through, that Ashley Young was a great servant to United, won league titles with them, but, you know, time to go. Alexis Sanchez, you look at him and he still doesn't mean he's going to come back and be amazing for Manchester United, because he wasn't really that good. One thing that Sanchez has always done throughout his career is he gives the ball away. For an elite player, he gives the ball away a hell of a lot, even when he was at his best with Arsenal.
Yeah, weren't we told that was because he's taking risks? That was the when that stat came out, it was like, oh no, but that's okay, it's because he's
taking risks. Well, he should stop taking risks, because he's been doing it for the last, say, 6-7 years now. I think with Lukaku, there was a sense that when he played at United, you know, he would score goals. One thing that he was criticised for was he didn't score enough goals in big games. But technically, at times, you know, when he's running at you, he's brilliant. But sometimes his touch is so loose. So also as well, you have to look at the standard of Serie A. Inter Milan didn't qualify for the knockout stage of the Champions League.
They were in a tough group, right?
Yeah.
And they played well in some of those games.
They did, but I'm now starting to think that if anyone's going to stop Juventus in the Serie A title race, it's actually going to be Lazio. So that game is going to be huge next week. And if Lazio beat Inter, then, you know, I wonder what that does for Inter. Does that bury them once and for all?
27 minutes past nine here, Phil. We've got to talk about Carlo Ancelotti and the job he's doing at Everton. Everton 5 points off Chelsea in fourth at the moment. And starting to put some wins together.
Yeah, now, I don't know if this is going to go down very well with the Everton fans, but
sure, look,
I'm looking at who they've beaten, right, in the league.
Facts, Phil. Yeah. You're bringing us facts.
Yeah, Burnley, Newcastle, Brighton, Watford and Crystal Palace.
Yeah, look, here's the thing, right? You say that, but all those teams have had random victories against top four sides already this season.
No, absolutely. And look, you know,
obviously not Liverpool.
What happens is if you don't beat them, then that's why you're in trouble. So you have to make that the norm where you beat these teams. Let's see what happens in the next few weeks, because look at their fixtures now. They're away to Arsenal, home to United, away to Chelsea. They have the derby against Liverpool. Then they're away to Norwich. They play Leicester. They play Spurs, Southampton, Wolves.
Two of those teams are ahead of them in the league.
Yeah.
They're ahead of Man United. They're ahead of Wolves. They're ahead of Arsenal at the moment.
Yeah.
But they have lost to...
They've a game more played, obviously, than United, Wolves and Arsenal.
Like Burnley, Brighton, Norwich, some of the teams that beat them before Ancelotti came in. The talk around Ancelotti now is the kind of restoring of traditional values to the Premier League here via a 4-4-2. How much credit does he deserve versus how much credit should be dished out to Duncan Ferguson? Because people are like, Dominic Calvert-Lewin looks amazing now under Carlo Ancelotti, when in actual fact, once Ferguson came in, he started to look like a different player.
Yeah, and you know, when Ferguson came in, you could see there was already a different attitude, that there was a bit more fight in them, and obviously Ancelotti came in off the back of that, and what he's kind of continued it, but they obviously probably they're not as direct maybe as they were with Ferguson. But I mean, Ferguson was only there for a few games; he was barely any time to implement a game plan. He just wanted to get a bit of fire in their bellies, and they certainly did that. Calvert-Lewin is a handful because he can run the channels. And he's actually, you know, he doesn't look very physical, but he's no problem throwing himself about.
Yeah.
And he's now starting to score goals. Whether he's the long-term solution, I don't know. I mean, they signed Moise Keane. They were hoping he would...
He's a kid, though.
He is a kid, and there's already been a few signs that under Ancelotti, maybe things might be a bit better for him. Obviously, he was brought on by Moise Keane at Old Trafford and taken off, and that could crush a kid's confidence, but... Ancelotti is very good at putting the arm around players, and we've seen he's got good man management skills. So let's see what happens in the next few weeks.
From an Irish perspective, James McCarthy played an hour in that game, started, looks like he's ready to go, put him in the team, pick me, and also Seamus Coleman started and played the whole game.
Yeah, Seamus Coleman started, and Sidibe came on and replaced Walcott. So Coleman is back to being first choice. In terms of James McCarthy, I don't know if he wants to play these games for Ireland, because he's only just got back. This is his first real serious run of games, because he's shaken off the injuries. So maybe he thinks, I'll sit the next couple of games out, and maybe Stephen Kenny has a conversation with him when he takes over and the next campaign starts, and he said, you're in my plans. Maybe you, Stephen Kenny doesn't want him.
You were politely scoffing, essentially, at my Ancelotti when I was talking about potential top four. You think there's no chance. You think their record is fake. Fake record.
I think it's fake. No, I mean, you can only beat who's put in front of you. But I think, just looking at their fixtures, I don't think they're going to get top four. No, but if they finish with European football, that'd be unbelievable. Just, you know.
Probably best just to finish one place out of European football next season, because their squad's not big enough.
Not at the moment, but where Everton, if they're going to go and push on to the next level, they have to get their recruitment spot on this summer.
All right, it's been a while since they've done that. Phil, good stuff. Thanks, William, for joining us. That's all from us here this Monday morning on OTB AM. Off the Ball's back in your radios tonight from 7 o'clock, Monday Night Rugby, the football show, and much more besides. You can subscribe to the OTB AM podcast wherever you get your podcast. Just search OTB AM. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. We're the best place actually to get us now is the Go Loud app, which you can get wherever you get your apps. We're also on offtheball.com/podcast. Today we had football with Anthony Moyles, Six Nations reaction with Alan Quinlan, the best football partnerships. There's the sports pages, your top five stories, and much more. You can get the podcast, or we're also on YouTube where you can cast the show to your smart TV. OTB AM, Ireland's first and only sports breakfast show. Back tomorrow morning at 7:30. We'll see you then. Best of luck.
OTB AM. Brought to you by Pandora. Celebrate love with a special gift. That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.